Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
House of Representatives directory, complete with phone number and verified links
to the representative's official website, Twitter page, Facebook page, YouTube channel, Flickr page, and RSS feeds. And also there are conservative crusades done by the Patriot Journalist Network, and which they make it easy to tweet out positive encouragements to targeted elected officials who support specific up-to-the-minute conservative topics, cause, and legislation. There's also custom Twitter bio backgrounds. Check those out. And then there's automatic mentions. This is for team members, in which if you follow any of the team members, you will get mentions for each one you follow. And there is also a U.S. House Twitter list, the GOP members, and where it says to keep your fingers on the pulse of the verified Twitter timeline of all GOP U.S. House members. And it says it is a public list, so you're welcome to subscribe. And there's also a chat room where you can join the conservative conversation, and where our chat room is rich with features like YouTube video integration, games, sound effects, and more. And you can use your Twitter or Facebook account to log in. Now, if you do become a member, it says stuff that's offered to the members. It's automatic tweet scheduler. And there's also automatic follow acknowledgments as well as automatic retweet acknowledgments. And some background on the Patriot Journalist, which, of course, I'll reiterate, you can find on patriotjournalist.com. And that's PatriotJournalist.com. And what they put here is who we are. We are a team of conservative Twitter users working together to support one another and conservative causes. More than that, just a hashtag or intent to participate, each opted-in member has given permission to the Patriot Journalist Twitter application to post tweets on their behalf. Now, what we do is we seek out elected officials who are doing the right thing, and then we applaud them publicly on Twitter. The Patriot Journalist Twitter application posts tweets on behalf of members automatically, whether the user is online or not. App-generated tweets increase members' visibility, providing mutual support among members, as well as supporting the conservative cause in general. And then how we do it. Our members have opted in and granted permission for the Patriot Journalist Twitter application to do most of the work for them automatically. Automatic follow-up acknowledgments, the Patriot Journalist application, scans each member followers. As new followers are detected, a thank you tweet is automatically posted on the behalf of the member. The tweet also recommends other team members with a mention. Also, there's automatic retweet acknowledgments, where the Patriot Journalist application scans each member's retweets. And as new retweets are detected, a thank you tweet is automatically posted on the behalf of the member. And as I mentioned earlier about the crusades, conservative crusades, tweeting to a targeted group, while offered to the public on a click-by-click basis, members can launch a crusade that schedules all tweets to the entire group with a single click. Reoccurring tweet scheduler, team members can set up tweets that will automatically be posted around the clock. Each tweet reschedules itself at a flexible intervals. And members have the exclusive access, as I mentioned earlier, the live video text chat, which you can check that out on some nights here. You can find it at 9:30 Eastern time. So if folks like to check that out before the Bard's Logic political talk show, that would be great. And team members there gather to review and discuss new video clips that have been freshly harvested from numerous conservative news sources. Informative but informal. It's educational, uplifting, and entertaining. And we offer coaching and support for members who may be new to Twitter. But why should we care? It says Twitter users, it has 465 members representing an aggregate 942,000 plus followers. the Patriot Journalist Twitter application has a proven track record of magnifying and amplifying your conservative voice on Twitter. Put the leverage of this awesome tool to work, not just for you, but for the encouragement of other like-minded conservative Twitter users and the conservative cause. And for elected officials, the Patriot Journalist Twitter application is a unifying team seeking to applaud your conservative legislative efforts. Use our contact link to have a member of our leadership team contact you to discuss how we can help light up Twitter with your conservative message. And, of course, then we here listen to Bard's Logic Political Talk. If you go to the PatriotJournalist.com, and that's www.patriotjournalist.com, just let them know that you've heard this on Bard's Logic Political Talk. And I just really appreciate doing that. So what we will do is move on for the show tonight. Is what we're going to discuss is Happy New Year and moving forward and defeating liberals now to 2014. And the way that we will do that tonight is by continuing discussion on the Newt Gingrich's memo to the RNC. And you can hear past shows of this discussion in the archives of this show, where we've covered other portions of Newt Gingrich's memo to the RNC. And one thing we will discuss during our analysis is what path must Republicans take to defeat the Democrats into 2014, and will the Republicans do this? Will they follow the recommendations by Newt Gingrich? And what I think is more importantly, what will be available for conservatives to achieve victory from liberals in the House, Senate, and state governors moving forward? And so before we continue on with the discussion and moving on to that memo, just like to ask folks a couple things. One, if you are new to the show or you're listening to live or on the archives, go to the little follow button under the show's icon that you can find on Blog Talk Radio. And it will just send updates on when the show will be airing so you can use for yourself or share for others. So, as I said, it's really easy to just go to the homepage of the show on Blog Talk Radio, click the little follow button under the show's icon, and you'll be well on your way to following the show. And also, if you could check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, you could check out the page. It's got contact information for me. It also has a Get Involved page where one of the things I've been promoting is to click on the Save the Elephants. Save an Elephant button, which will take you to the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. And once there, it'll take you where you can sponsor a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers, of course, for their ivory. And you can find out more information about that and their anti-poaching efforts there at the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. So check it out, but also you will see some links. One of those links you'll see on the website is a link to the memo that we will be discussing tonight. So for the folks who are going to be listening to the show, or if you're going to listen to it on the archives and want to refer to the article later, the memo later, that would be one place to go, is to the www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk website. It's www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com website, I should say, and there you'd be able to follow the article there. And also there's other things to check out. There's links there to go to the Lugnut. Nice to see you in chat. Well, I'm seeing there, Roy Nation. I appreciate you coming there in the chat as well. So thank you very much and enjoy the show. And I'm going to take a little drink here, some water to unparch me. So if you would excuse me while I do so, I didn't bring anything in the studio in for me, so hold on. Okay, much better. Okay, so what we're going to begin with is just doing a little recap, and of course you can listen more in detail to the shows covering this topic on the archives that you could find on Blog Talk Radio. And Let's see. I see. Thank you, Tessa. I seen you in there, too. I was cooking, yes, this late. I understand. I eat dinner late on very many occasions. But if anyone would like to call in, either just to listen or to chime in on the conversation for tonight, the call-in number is 347-945-7428. Now, beginning with our the portion of our show where we are going to talk about the memo is I'm going to do a recap of what we've covered so far. Now, the memo, which you know, I started off saying was found interesting to me, was put out there at the request, or you know, was made by Newt Gingrich at the request of none other than Ritz Priebus. Which I find interesting. You would think that since Ritz Priebus is the head of the RNC, that this would be something that he would have the ability to take on himself. But many of us know that that is definitely, if not all of us, that definitely isn't within the ability of Ritz Priebus. Which brings me to say that perhaps Ritz Priebus ought to be replaced by Newt Gingrich, and I think that would not only do well for the Republican Party, for Ritz Priebus to be replaced by Newt Gingrich. I believe that would also do well for conservatives, for Ritz Priebus to be replaced by Gingrich. And so what he continues, of course, with the memo is, you know, scrolling down, you know, giving some platitudes, which, you know, we won't repeat here because, you know, it's just platitudes, you know, to someone. Well, to Ritz Priebus, I guess. But one of the things it talks about is how it's going to be a beginning of a 4 to 6, but it's going to be the beginning of a 4 to 6 month project, considering what the Republican Party must do to become competitive in all 50 states. And one of the things we're, even now, this shortly after the 2012 election, are starting to prepare for is, of course, the 2014 elections in which, you know, get state, as we mentioned in the description, governors, the House of Representatives, senators, to getting elected. And not so as important, at least for me, that they end up being Republican, but, of course, if they're conservative, you know, politicians, because we've seen, you know, you've had Republicans get in there, but if they're, you know, if they're not conservatives, it's pretty much, you know, look at Boehner. It's pretty much going to give what Obama wants anyway. And we certainly, of course, do not doubt. Now, they'll complain and, you know, bitch and moan, but then it seems to give in to and pretend to have the veneer of compromise or the veneer of fighting for conservative values. But we know that's really not the case. It's just smoke and mirrors to make them look like they are doing something, but that's not the case. We know that. So, we'll get past the platitudes, you know, that, you know, he was talking about. And one of the things we touched on is how Gingrich said that he was very shaken on how wrong he was in projecting a Republican victory on election night. But I like to speak to that because I personally think that knew that Romney couldn't win. Certainly many of the folks who came on Barr's Logic Political Talk during the primaries and during the election, you know, knew better than that Romney would not be able to win. I mean, as we said many times, and we'll say again, that there has not been a moderate Republican to, you know, win the White House in 40 years. But, you know, that's in the past. We're using this as a starting point of moving forward into 2013 to work our way towards 2014, even now this early after the election, because it's going to be very important to get people motivated and get people involved so that we can have, you know, not just a Republican victory, but a conservative victory in 2014. So moving on is, you know, I know that might be so not as popular with some folks, but yeah, we'll, you know, it's not just about the Republican, party. It's not, we talked a lot about the duopoly here. So, I know that some folks would not like that. Did I say that? Did I make a slip there? So I apologize for that. I was reading the talking and reading the chat at the same time. Is yes. We go to the chat. Says, I don't have much to say about the fiscal cliff. I'm more interested talking about gun control, so I'll just listen. Okay, yeah, we're not talking about gun control so much. And we're probably not going to cover the fiscal cliff much tonight. We're going to be talking more about, what the Republican Party is going to have to do in order to be competitive against the Democrat machine to be successful electorally in 2014. So that's what we'll be discussing tonight. If you'd like to hear more about the gun control issues, then you can check that out on the show here on Blog Talk Radio, which you can hear on the nights that you will not hear Bard's Logic Political Talk, and that is the show Coalition of Freedom. I see Roy Nation left a little early. Before knowing that, I guess, I didn't have the opportunity to read the chat earlier. So hopefully he'll come back on. And, yes, and also there's the Text and Rec show, which, of course, folks can find on Sunday evenings from 10 until midnight Eastern time. And they do talk about a lot of things such as this. And I think they briefly mentioned about Newt's memo to the Republican Party, what they need to be competitive in 2014. But, they also, as Tessa, thank you very much for talking in the chat, to bring that up. Tessa says, yep, we hate both parties. And then we hear about Newt. Thank you, Lugnut. And hi, Arlene. Yes, if Arlene is out there, I want to thank Arlene very much for promoting the show. I really appreciate it on the different Facebook groups and things of that nature, and for those on Twitter who promoting the show. But we'll continue on with the recap of Newt's memo here to the RNC. I want to go back to the point where I don't think that Newt Gingrich really thought. I mean, he's just so intelligent that. Okay, I was reading again. I say so intelligent that I don't think that he, really believed that Romney could win. I mean, Newt Gingrich is a historian. He knows, the history that we talked and touted, about, very much during the primary. So, and then even, of course, even some during the general election. But we kind of moved away from the Republican Party during the general election because, they just the top of the ticket just did not reflect our conservative values. So we were looking elsewhere, of course, such as parties such as the Constitution Party, which is, at least in my mind right now, more conservative than what the Republicans are putting out there at this time. So moving down the article for the folks who just chimed in, if they'd like to find the article so they can follow along with us, just go to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, and on the Get Involved page, you will find a button that will send you to a link in order to get there so you can share that with us. So we're moving on to down the article. We talked about, 1977. They start bringing on the supply side economics, and tax cuts. And, of course, we know some who have called that or dubbed the supply side as voodoo economics. And I know who were talking about there, one such George Bush Sr. Talked about that, which actually, he came in on the coattails of Reagan. Many would say George Bush Sr. was not a conservative, so, the premise that no conservative has won in a general election from 40 years. Well, if you think about it, George Bush Sr., rode in on the conservative coattails of Ronald Reagan when he won his first term of presidency. However, when he moved even more so towards the center, then that is when he lost against Bill Clinton because, when Republicans run through the center, then the electorate do not see a big difference much of what they've seen here in 2012 between the Republican and the Democrat, well, the Democrats, when especially when they are the incumbent. So what I'll do now is go back to the chat, and I think there is a link that Lugnut put in the chat. Oh, okay. It says the fiscal cliff article, just I'll mention it, we'll get back to this, to the Newt Gingrich, because there's a picture here of Newt. It says the fiscal cliff sparks anger among conservatives. And we might be able to touch that later on tonight with that article, but right now we'd like to concentrate and hopefully be able to go through the this memo tonight and perhaps finish it up, because what we're doing is going through the questions that Newt Gingrich was posing, or statements, you know, that he was posing as a challenge to the Republican Party. So we'll just do it that way. But we won't do much more of the recap, because I just want to get down to the questions that Newt Gingrich posed to the GOP. So moving down, he was talking about our challenge. What he means our challenge, of course, he's talking to the Republican Party, and where he's talking about what I think the rhinos of the Republican Party, who in my opinion, of course, many as well, think need to be replaced, is Newt said, they are very powerful, well-connected, and prestigious forces who have made a lot of money out of the old system and have a huge interest in keeping it intact. It may be bad for the GOP, but it is good for them. And then he continues, there are a number of influential people who are simply uncomfortable trying to think through fundamental change. They like to raise money and spend money. Over the last six presidential elections, they have been in the minority five times. If money were the answer, by now they would have found a majority. And, of course, Newt Gingrich is talking about the Republican Party, but, you know, in the House of Representatives. So, and I believe the very powerful, well-connected, and prestigious forces that Newt was talking about is, of course, you know, the rhino portion of the Republican Party, which is obviously taking over the GOP. And, of course, those include Rich Priebus. And there's also Boehner, and I understand that there is an effort to remove Boehner as the speaker, but I hate to say this, but I see that as doubtful at this point in time that that's going to happen. But we'll see. But I just don't see that in the works of them getting rid of Boehner. I'd actually be very surprised if that was the case for them to do so, you know, for them to get rid of Boehner. I don't see it, but we'll see. You know, because of course I think, you know, Boehner is just a leadership of kowtowing to Obama and the Democrats. I mean, we've seen that, you know, in what's going on. I mean, they cow down for Obamacare, for instance. I mean, the House of Representatives run by the Republicans, you know, the funding Obamacare. So what does that tell you? They pretend that they're going to fight, you know, but then they just give in. So, but they're in power, and as long as they have the veneer that they are fighting against the Democrats in order to just keep their small group in power, and they're so insulated in what really happens in this country, then I don't think they really don't care. They don't really care about conservatism, you know, and that, you know, conservative things get passed. It's going to be only conservatism, especially fiscal conservatism, that's going to save America. But they're not interested as long as they're in power and people keep them in power. And so Newt then goes down and talk about the threat. And this is something that I wanted to point out, and I did on the previous shows, and I'll touch it a little bit here, is that there is a combination. This is what Newt put here under the threat. There is a combination of demographic trends, cultural changes, technological breakthroughs, and intelligent, disciplined applications of resources which could turn America into a national version of Chicago or California. Now, could you imagine that, folks, if the whole nation would go to the way of California or Chicago, especially California when you look at the economic mess that Chicago is in? I mean, think about that. I mean, could you imagine if the whole country looked at that? And unfortunate, you know, that's the way we're headed. And I believe that in part is because of, you know, following the duopoly. You know, the Republican, Democrat-Republican paradigm without, I emphasize, a powerful conservative influence in the Republican Party. And so one of the things that the Democrats have been doing, pointed out by Newt Gingrich, is they have been building a national machine while the Republicans have been running campaigns. Now, we well know that, you know, the Republicans are, you know, have been suffering from their next turnism, which, of course, you had McCain, who was beaten by George Bush, you know, back in 2000. And then, you know, George Bush, you know, went on to be president. But then who did they bring up? Who did they prop up in 2008? Well, they propped up, it's his turn. He lost against Bush in 2000. Well, in 2008, let's put McCain up so he can run because, well, it's his turn. Well, because, you know, then it was Romney. Well, okay, well, now McCain got the nomination and Romney did not. So, well, now it's Romney's turn. So let's prop up Romney and give Romney a chance to, you know, be the one to run for president. And it don't work. And that's exactly what Newt's talking about, where the Republicans have been running campaigns and, you know, and a campaign going against something. I mean, look at, you know, the Romney campaign going up against, you know, Obama. And what it wasn't just Obama that it was going up against, it was going up the Democrat machine. And, you know, so as Newt points out, machines, political machines, beat campaigns. They just do. They're more organized. They are better at messaging, you know, and they really get their narrative out to the people and make it as if what they, you know, what they're putting out there is the truth. And one of the ways they do that, I believe, and we won't touch this at length, you can hear more about it in the archives, is they're doing it through Hollywood, you know. I think the folks, you know what I mean by, you know, what I'm talking about, you know, them doing it through Hollywood, changing the culture and things of that nature. So, but moving on down the list here, and let me check the studio before I go into the article, is I do see in the switchboard, Trog, or as many of you know him as Chris, on the line. I'll be opening up his mic, without further ado. But, of course, he is the owner of the Coalition of Freedom Facebook page and also the new show, Coalition of Freedom, that you can hear on Blog Talk Radio. Your mic is live. Welcome to the show.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I was listening in there for a little bit. I'm having troubles getting the chat to come up. You got the chat on your show working?
Yeah, I got it up, and I do see people are starting to come in. So perhaps there was some kind of you know, trouble with folks getting in on the chat, but I do see some more in there.
Okay, I got it now.
You got it? Okay, great.
Yeah.
So how are you in there? Which one are you in as? Is guest or?
Oh, no. I just came. No, I'm saying it, you know, at the bottom, it wasn't coming up. It finally came up. So.
Well, okay.
Trog.
Sure. Yeah, there might have been some.
There we go.
Yeah, it looks like there might have been some issues there. And I do see someone new in the chat in the list. It looks like Sizzle Nut, welcome to the chat.
Sizzle Nut.
Okay, maybe I didn't read that right. But welcome to the show. Welcome to the chat. And if you like what you hear tonight, feel free to follow the show just by simply clicking the follow button on the show's homepage here on Blog Talk Radio. And also, if you do like the contents of Bard's Logic Political Talk, there's two other shows to follow as well. One is, of course, and Chris, you can tell us about last night's show briefly before we move on, about Coalition of Freedom, and also the Texan Rex show. So check them out on Blog Talk Radio as well. So tell us a little bit about last night, then we'll move on forward with the Newt's memo to the RNC.
Oh, you mean what I did last night on the show? My
yes.
son and I are on this ongoing Second Amendment thing and the you know, the gun bans that are going to be coming our way and the legislation and you know, we're going deep into this one. I'm not moving off of it. I'm going to continue to do work on this, continue to do shows, educate people. We're also working on I'm finding stories, you know, that, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 minute clips, whether it's a news clip or whatever, of people who have saved their life or somebody else's life by being a legal gun owner. And trying to profile this, because it seems, you know, there's a couple million of them a year, but you never hear about that one, do you, Robert?
No, you never hear any news on that on the TV.
You know, and then I noticed, I saw earlier, I have not read the whole article, but good old Chicago, which is a gun-free zone, gun-free
right.
if you're a legal citizen, is already on its 11th murder this year. This new year.
Gee.
So that's really, that's some lovely stuff.
Day one.
Obama should be proud. And actually, I want to do some profile work on the guy, the gentleman that has fought and took it to the Supreme Court for his right to bear arms. The guy was a, you know, ex-military vet, older gentleman. He was tired of getting broke, his house getting broke into, tired of getting his neighbors getting harassed. And he went out and applied for a permit, got denied. And he's the guy who took it to the Supreme Court and got the Supreme Court to tell Chicago that you can't stop people from their fundamental right to own arms and protect themselves. So I just started doing research on him. I mean, it's huge. You know, I opened a monster can of worms with this concept, and so we're just running with it. And another thing I did earlier, like when you were chatting with me, and I said I'm trying to listen to this video. I was listening
mm-hmm.
to Newt's 2011 NRA speech. And,
oh, okay.
I was just, what a breath of fresh air. And one of my comments, and I posted his 2012 speech, Ted Nugent was there. There was some other stuff there. I posted some, Katrina stuff under that post. You know, of them running around treating common, you know, law-abiding citizens like criminals, stopping them, taking their guns during the Katrina thing. I mean, people just don't get it. They just don't understand how close we are to a really bad situation in this country, you know, and especially over the Second Amendment. So, anyway, that's what we're working on. We'll see where it goes, you know. Trying to educate
folks,
people, you know.
Yeah, you know, folks, check out that. As I said, it's on Blog Talk Radio. The show is Coalition of Freedom, same name as you'll find the page on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
There are archives, so if you missed any of the previous shows, just go on there and check it out. And, of course, while you are listening to the show, just click the little follow button and follow the show. And
you can
download some things, too.
Can I ask you a technical question? When somebody clicks that follow button, what is the notification method? Are they following on a Facebook notification? Are they follow? Are people getting notices in
email?
They're
getting notices in emails. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, they'll get a notice in an email about an upcoming show. When there's an upcoming show. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Gotcha. So anyway, I heard you chatting about Mr. Gingrich's brilliance. Where are we at? Where you want to roll forward from here?
Well, I was just giving a little recap, but since we're on it, we still have a good 15 of the points that he was making. He's got them under the question column. We can.
What question
start,
did we end up on?
We stopped at question 9 on the article,
really?
And for the folks that just came in. You could find a link to this article on www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, and on the Get Involved page, you can find a button that has a link to the article we are discussing this evening.
Yeah, and you also have it on your right there on your
right.
You know, where the show is playing too.
Right. Yeah, I have it. Yeah, I have it on there as well. So, but one thing I've noticed, I don't know if it's still doing that, is if people click that, it takes them to a different page.
Oh, it didn't open the dang. Yeah, it didn't open in a new window.
Right. And I set it. That, yeah, it's technical stuff. I did set it up to open up in a new window, but it's not doing that. So I made it on the website.
Well, just copy. Yeah, just highlight it, copy it, paste it in your browser, and rock and roll.
That's true. That's definitely a way to do it as well. But yeah, but where we left off from the other night, and folks, if they missed the other shows on this topic, you can listen to it on the archives. But we stopped at number 9, and that's where we can continue. And what number 9 says, for those who don't have the benefit of the article in front of them right now, is a new put that says, a truly national party also has to learn to compete in urban America. The 87.5% turnout in Milwaukee, which shocked Wisconsin Republicans, should also be seen as a rebuke to a GOP, which is atrophied in urban America. The RNC will need to urban operation that recruits, trains, and supports candidates in urban environments. One of the great contributions in the 1970s and early 1980s was an aggressive local candidate program. The local elections division was crucial to the growth of the post-Watergate party. In the mid-1980s, it was reinforced by GOPAC. Without the work of those two steps, we would not have won a majority in 1994. The RNC is not the presidential committee. It is the national committee. As such, it should methodically build the party at every level. This requires a structure and budget to make the commitment real.
Yeah, interesting perspective. Every time I hear Newt say something like this, and I've said this through this whole document, memo, document, whatever you want to call it,
right.
Mastermind strategy, because it's definitely a Newt piece, very detailed, is that we have that local explosion in two different groups in the RNC, and that is the Tea Party, which you know, has given us 24 states, total control of states, and the Ron Paul Liberty Movement. So the question is, on one hand, I see what he's saying here, that the RNC's got to figure out how to do this, but I think what they need to do is they need to figure out how to coordinate the RNC. Actually, first they need to beg for forgiveness first from the Tea Party for helping the left to, you know, minimize them. And then they need to beg forgiveness from the Ron Paul people for what they did to Ron Paul and the delegates. And then after they beg forgiveness, or if they want to do it like the Japanese mafia does it, cut off a finger and then cry a little bit. They could get Boehner in there to do a little crying.
There you go.
Then they sit down with those people and say, how can we help you do what you already have done? Because that is the grassroots of this organization. So I get what Newt is saying, but I just, every time I see this stuff, I just go, well, yeah, duh. You know?
Right. Yeah, you had it. You had it. Well, not Newt, because he's conservative, but the Republican Party had it. And then, you know, what they did is they co-opted it, as we said, that, you know, many times before. And now, the Tea Party, you know, is pretty much disbanded, so to speak, because they've seen what happened to many of the candidates that got elected from their efforts. And I think it really, I think it really demoralized a lot of the Tea Party, and in some instances gave the Tea Party kind of a bad name, so to speak. So, you know, you know, we can go on to the next one unless you want to.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, just let me add one point, though, and I'm not trying to disagree with you, but I don't know that the Tea Party is disbanded because it's not a party. You know what I mean? It's groups, and I know that Harriet would disagree with you because she loves her Tea Party.
Well, I understand there are groups, but I'm saying as a national, what I mean by disbanded, and I'll elaborate, is what I mean by disbanded is I'm not talking about the individual Tea Parties. No, they're still out there and they're still working hard for the cause. But what I mean by disbanded is I believe that they were at the point where they were like a national group, you know, a smaller group coming together. A lot of smaller groups coming together at a national movement. And what I mean by disbanded is you do not see that national en masse movement and protests and things of that nature coming from the Tea Party. You did not see that in 2012.
Right. Well, I also heard, you know, early on in the primary, because we were asking that question, what are the Tea Parties going to do? Of course, Newt had like, I don't remember, was it 140-some Tea Parties backing him by the time he got to South Carolina, you know, before Romney and Rubio and the RNC destroyed him in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Bubio. But I remember hearing different major high-level Tea Party people or high-profile Tea Party people saying we're not going to get that involved in the national election. We're going to focus on the states and local elections.
But I also
think that part of that, there was twofold. One is they knew the RNC was going to make Romney the nominee through crook coercion. They didn't care. They knew it. So I had a feeling that they just said, let you guys go destroy our presidential election and we'll focus where we can make things happen. So I'm not sure, you know, I'm still waiting for that spotlight, you know, to flash the Batman sign in the sky that the Tea Party is, what direction they're going, the Tea Parties, because I'm not sure yet. I don't have my fingers on that yet to really get a feel for what they're doing or not doing.
Brian,
you're going to see a huge 2014. I bet you'll see a huge uprising.
Well, and I hope so. And I'm glad you said uprising because in 2010 we certainly seen an uprising in the Tea Party. I mean, you see it all around. I'm just saying that that's something that I did not see very much of in 2012. And I think we need that. And Harriet, of course, she's out there, and I believe she is, being an active member in the Tea Party herself. You'd like to, you know, call in and chime in that at some point. That, you know, that's fine too, of course. But I tell you what, we did talk about wanting to move through this, so let's move on to the next question we have here, a statement. It's under the question portion of the article. And here's one thing I highlighted here. It says, Washington is going to be a mess for the next 4 years, but there are 30 state capitals with Republican governors achieving positive solutions. Now, one of the things we've talked about, you know, many times, and we'll continue, you know, later on and talk about this again, and hopefully we can, you know, get those, you know, 101s we talked about. But we'll talk about, you know, the importance of, you know, the state houses and governors and state politics, and how that's that's something that's very important too, that is many times overlooked.
Yeah, I totally agree. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to go ahead and continue on. I know we keep doing that. Go, Chris.
I've put it on hold to deal with the gun control issue because that popped up, you know, and kind of gave me something I had to focus on. But I have been building documents to identify all of the national, you know, senators and representatives, because all the House of Representatives is up for re-election in 2014, 33 senators. And I'm also building a document of all the governors. And then, I don't know if I'm going to get personally have enough time and energy to try to figure out all the states. You know what I'm saying?
I can focus
on the national numbers and the name brand, you know, national politicians, because I think people really, I really believe that with the rise of the Tea Party, the attempted destruction of the Tea Party, the people who we thought were Tea Party people who are traitors and turned out to be rhinos, like Rubio, you know what I'm saying? That I think people are really rethinking how they vet their candidates. And I think that the term, and you've heard me talk about this before, the term of what is a conservative is where people really need to step back and say, what am I really? You know, what do I really want to accomplish politically, you know, in my life and my vote and my money? And because I think a lot of people have been hoodwinked, I think there's a lot of people that are still confused and think that Bush was a conservative. Oh, that was a good joke. After dinner joke, you know, and Boehner and Ryan. Ryan, excuse me? Has anybody ever looked at his record, his voting record? Come on, people. You need to get a better view of what you think a conservative is, and then I don't want to say it this way. Okay, I won't say it. And do some research and read and look at their records and look at the things that they voted for, including debt ceiling increases and endless wars and the Patriot mm-hmm. Act and NDAA and this stupid thing that they're getting ready to vote on now. You know, the lie of the second lie of the century from the House. You know, on the fiscal cliff bull crap. So, you know, I think that that's really important. I think people need to really, you know, we got 2 years to make some huge inroads. Can it be done? You dang right it can be done. Newt's saying the same thing. He's going, yeah, is there some serious stuff we need to look at and evaluate and make decisions on and change? Yeah. But, you know, I love the part up above in the article when he talks about the GOP at one time had done so bad. I don't know if it was post-Watergate era that only 18% of the population identified with the Republican Party. 18%. You know, that's lower than we are now, but not much. And they recovered quickly and started winning again. So can they do it? You bet. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, well, yeah, I've got, let's see here, looking at the okay, someone was just telling me they're going to call in shortly, and I'll be sending you a message later on it. But before I do so, I will read on to number 10, as I said, for those who don't have it in mm-hmm. front of us. As he continues with, in 24 states, there is Republican control of the executive and legislative branch. There should be a close daily alliance between the RNC, the RGA, and House Republicans. Every effort should be made to move Republican achievements from the states to national media. House Republicans should host hearings led by Republican governors with success stories and other hearings with Republican governors reporting on waste and failure in the federal government in their states. In addition, a thorough analysis to be undertaken of successful Republican governors. How do they win? How do they govern? And how do they hold their coalitions together? Washington has a lot to learn from the states.
I'm sorry. That's like a say duh. You know what I mean? That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are you saying there? And you know what else? You know what that second series of sentences, House Republicans should hold hearings and success stories and da-da-da-da. It's called messaging. You know, it just seems to be something that Republicans can't do. Republicans are always on the defense. They're always reactive, and they're always being led around by the nose by Obama and the lamestream media. They don't know how to get up and control the dialogue and control the message. And one thing that, I mean, you would think they would understand this by now, but every 3 days is the next crisis of the week, you know? And so they just keep people confused and fearful and upset all the time. And Republicans are always trying to keep up with that. And it's insane. You know, it's like Newt said in a Twitter earlier, he said they should get up and go home, quit playing Obama's game. You know, I mean, it's just sometimes, you know, you wonder if they'll ever get this. I mean, Newt has talked about this. If you listen to an old C-SPAN documentary that was done on him back in the late 90s after he had gotten out of government, he did an amazing documentary, three-part documentary on him. And he talked about the Republicans back then. He said, we had to teach the guy, these people how to talk. You know, they were so busy being the backbenchers, so busy being the defensive, you know, almost like mentally, this is our place in life in America. We're the second-rate party. He said it was almost like you had to do a complete remake of the way they viewed themselves. So they would get up and start talking with purpose and with vision and with passion. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with what Newt Sam.
Okay, and I sent you over that message. And, yeah, we, you know, and so we've talked to, you know, a lot about the states and what can be learned from there and, you know, state sovereignty and state's power. And so, you know, he's touching that, I think, a little bit, but I think he's focusing more on, you know, where they've been successful, you know, but – you know, whether, and I like the idea where he's talking about, you know, well, tell about the government waste and the government, your failures, you know, with the federal government. I think that's important. And one thing I want to chime in about is someone just sent me a message where they're showing me a receipt. We could, this could be for another show. We could talk about this later. I just want to mention it while I have it on here. It's a receipt from somewhere. And the message, thank you, Colleen, for sending this to me, says, and this could be on sent me through Facebook, says, okay, here comes some of those Obamacare taxes on January 1, 2013. Soon, every purchase you make, there will be more taxes. On $103.98, I was charged $8.58 for Texas state taxes. And then Obamacare, Medicare, medical tax, another $2.39. So the more you spend, the more goes to the so-called free Obamacare. And I'm looking at a picture of and I'll ask her later if I could get this, take this picture and share it, but I don't want to do it without her permission. What I do see, it says on the receipt, medical excise tax, $2.39. So that's something we can go over later, but that's kind of like a report that I wanted to get out there as I received it. So let's move on to the next statement here, number 11. It says, the challenge of Latino, Asian American, Native American, and African American support must be met or the GOP will become a permanent minority party. We must think through inclusive and not outreach. Our outreach occurs, well, we've heard him say this you know, before many times on shows where he gives us example. I'll move down where it says, as a start, the RNC should bring together minority elected Republicans and those white Republicans who do best in minority communities. New strategies and systems have to be built starting with listening to people we want to recruit and attract. This challenge is so big, so hard, and so central to our success that it should be one of the top three items at every meeting. They have one of the largest budgets at the RNC. Anything less will simply fail, as it has for the last 50 years. The same model of inclusion has to be applied to expanding Republican strength among women and especially among younger single women. We should establish specific goals for increases in support within these groups for 2014, 2016. Now, I've got some opinions on this myself, Chris, but go ahead and what you got
no,
on
go
that.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Well, I'm still reading your message trying to figure out what the heck it meant. So.
I believe Kelly's getting a hold of you as well. But one thing I don't like about this, this talking about, you know, expanding Republican strength among women, especially younger single women or minorities, whatever. I think when you try to take a certain section of the sector of the population and you try to say, look, we need to include them. And I've got no problem, of course, with including folks. Of course, you know, they say the Republican Party is a big umbrella. But my concern is that instead of that umbrella being ideologically based, that it's going to be on sector-based or, you know, like women issue-based or minority issues-based, instead of it being a more broad more conservative based umbrella conservatives, you know, that's over conservative issues, not necessarily specific issues that are of the interest of certain sectors of the population. I think that's a dangerous way of doing it. I know he talks about coalition. Well, we got to get these different coalitions of groups to do. But look what the Democrat Party does. You know, it sends out platitudes to all their certain groups. They promise certain things to one sector. They promise another of their electorate. They promise other things to another selection of their electorate, but they never come through. You know, I mean, one thing, you know, African-Americans or black Americans, they vote 90-40, 96% Democrat, at least in the presidential, you know, on a consistent basis. But if you look at the unemployment rate among black Americans, I mean, it's very high. But yet they continue to vote for them. So by having, you know, population sector goals, I think is dangerous, one, because you might very well lose your principles, and two, you're going to make some, you know, you might get fall to the trap of making some kind of promises that you're not going to be able to keep.
I don't know that. I think what Newt, just knowing the way Newt thinks strategically, that what he's saying is that, you know, we've got to reach out to these groups and find out why it is that they, you know, what they're not getting. I think the first thing is what don't you understand about the Republican message, you know, and number two, you know, what is it that, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges, this is a spin back to some other things he had talked about, that the challenge is we've just given up on certain segments of the society. We don't spend any money there. You know, they don't even campaign in California. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not sure that he's saying we got to go in there and figure out what we can offer them as much as we got to figure out how we can reach them. You know, that's just, you know, I don't think Newt is one that would say, you know, change your principles or change your platform for him. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm not saying Newt is saying that at all. And I do agree, of course. You know, he wants to find out, you know, why they're not, you know, voting for Republicans. It's something we need to discover. I'm just saying that it could be a slippery slope to create the environment in which, instead of, you know, pushing your message, and I agree you should have the message, but instead of that message to be understood, you know, being where conservatism can actually benefit these separate sectors of the American population, instead, my concern is instead of them doing that, they will have a more, you know, specific population sectored ideas and promises that they will try to dole out to bring these folks in that historically has, you know, have proven out to be where they don't come through. But I think messaging is important, and they're not getting the message out. I agree, you know, and I agree that, you know, you should include these folks in, and you want to bring, you know, these folks into the, you know, into the Republican Party if you want to be a successful party. But just watch out for the dangers of it of being singular issue, you know, like, you know, what some would consider, you know, black issues or women's issues or things like that. If you focus too much on that instead of, you know, messaging how conservatism can help those sectors, you know, of the American population, I think that just can be, you know, a dangerous road to take. I'm not saying you don't bring them in. It's how you bring them in is what I think is what needs to be, you know, put in there as well.
Well, I think,
there's a discussion
I think
on that.
I think what I said is key, and I've heard this before from Newt and from other people, is that Republicans don't even try in certain markets. They don't even attempt to get in there and have conversations and, you know, and get to know people or sit down with leaders in communities of, you know, different cultures or troubled areas in America and have some conversations and listen to what these people have to say. That goes back to what I said the other day is, you know, learn how to listen again.
Well, that as well, and I agree with that point. where, you know, yeah, they have given up. I mean, I pretty much, they've given up in like places like California, as we've mentioned on past shows. But also, politics, you know, especially in the national level, has become so money-focused that it's more about the money and focusing where the money is going to be spent than, the message. And so they're like, well, we can't win here, so we're not going to spend any time, effort, or resources here because we've got this money and we're going to, you know, dump it all in this one area where, you know, swing states. That's why people are getting so concerned about the swing states. You hear a lot of people like who are in California or in New York or, you know, or in maybe even some red states, you know, if you have Democrats there saying, look, you know, I feel like my vote doesn't count. I mean, they can spend politicians of one party or the other, you know, and this is about the American people. I mean, I'm trying to go a little bit beyond party here and go to the American people, whether you're Democrat or Republican, say, look, you know, I'm in a state where I feel like my vote doesn't matter, you know, because as you said, Chris, they, you know, they don't go to certain states or spend states, you know, in there. And that is definitely that's something that's going to have to change. And that may escalate for any particular party, but I think that needs to change for, you know, the actual involvement of the American people in the political process.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that people need to know, people need to, oh man, how do I explain this? The people need to be educated. You know, what is the process and what is your involvement? And I don't know. Yeah, it's a messaging thing again. And I'll never forget Newt saying that, you know, they're minority programs. There's five white guys sitting in a room talking about how to be inclusive with the Hispanic or the African-American or the single women. He's going, we need these people in the damn meetings.
Right.
Common sense. These people sit around, these consultants and these groups and these politicians and these, you know, the committee people, you know, the RNC, and they all sit around. They want to study you to figure out how to get your vote. That is not a way to touch the heart of a human being. That is so stupidly simple of an idea. You know, you can't analyze how to convince somebody and sell them. See, that's one of the biggest problems with Romney. His whole campaign was a lie. He lied. He changed positions. He was called the flip-flopper. He's a 1%, upper 1%. You know, he's hobnobbing with people all over the world, got money in Iranian oil fields. Give me a state run and our enemy. I mean, the guy was just he was absolutely the worst Republican you could have run against Obama.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were running around spending all – and Karl Rove and his super PACs and all these people spending all this money trying to sell him like some kind of damn rock star. He never connected with the people.
Right. No, definitely. And they should have known that. But I think they thought that, you know, people feared Obama so much that they could put it, you know – any, you know, rhino up there and they get elected. But I do see someone on the switchboard. Looks like 202 on there. What area code is that? I think that's in Washington, D.C. But I've got to open it up, 202. Your mic is live.
Mr. Speaker, we've got 1-2 for you. Talk to you.
Can you clear your mic? I can barely hear you.
Oh. This is John Boehner, Speaker of the House. I wanted to address your radio talk show.
Well, yeah, what do you have to say, Mr. Speaker?
Well, I really don't appreciate some of the division you've created within the Republican Party. You have created some problems. You're even, on your website, you have a listing of third-party candidates. This is destroying the Republican Party. Look, I need to tell you how this works up here on the Hill. We've got lots of issues. We've got socialists who are trying to take over the country, and we just really got to straighten things out. I would think it would be good to explain how things work on the Hill. I would be glad to field some questions.
Yeah, well, why did you support Romney?
He was the only one who could beat Obama.
But he didn't beat Obama.
Well, we have our, well, we're a looking right now at what we can do to maybe revitalize the Republican Party. We need to look at some other options. I like Newt Gingrich's letter to Rince Priebus. Me and my staff, we are looking at the considerations brought forth.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
Well, we really need to, point 11 you were just making, we need to start including people instead of having outreaches. That's a good idea. Maybe we should look at the youth. Ron Paul had a following, but, we did something. Well, we need outreach to the, outreach. We need outreach into the youth, future generations. This party must survive. We must do that. And maybe we should work a little harder on Newt's memo.
Well, we're going to continue on with that. Here we've got a lot more than what Newt thinks that he can help the Republican Party in being competitive in 50 states. So we're going to continue on with that.
Listen, but I got to tell you something, guys. All right, look, I know some people don't like the corporate influence. All right, but look, they have funded our campaigns. Without them, we can't beat the Democrats. We've got to continue the corporate leg. I know Newt has some comments about that. We know the concerns here, but there are funding. And we cannot beat the Democrats without their funding.
Without whose funding?
The corporations. I mean, this grassroots thing, come on. I mean, don't grassroots people know this is where funding comes from? I mean, I know the grassroots is rising up. I know we got the youth. I know Ron Paul, people really supported grassroots and the movement and all this Constitution stuff. But look, we've got to stay in power. If we let the Democrats take over, we're going to have a lot of problems in this country. If we would have allowed, I know Romney lost, but he was our best chance. I mean, he may not have been the best conservative, but we just can't let the Democrats take control.
Seems like that's just about what we just did. What happened to the Tea Party? I mean, the Tea Party comes in and gives us sweeping wins in 2010. The liberals start attacking them and Sarah Palin, and the RNC and the existing people in power in the House and Senate did nothing to help them, to back them, to defend them. That was one of the biggest grassroots movement we've seen in this history since Newt's Republican Revolution. What was that about?
Well, all I can say is we really appreciate the Tea Party's vote. They blindly went for Romney. We needed them to defeat the Democrats.
Yeah, it seems like we needed those 2-4 million Ron Paul people that got disenfranchised to the primary, too.
Look, here's the deal, okay? There are three branches of the Republican Party. There's the conservative branch, which I pretend to be. There is the Tea Party branch, or the constitutionalists. And then there's the corporate branch. It is a stool with three legs. If we happen to kick out one of the legs, that's another story. But you know what? The corporate leg, or the Tea Party leg, and we had to make a choice because the corporations are funding our campaign re-election.
So, here's an interesting thought on this whole corporation thing. Wouldn't it be almost could be said that because of the corporations and the 1% and the Occupy movement, that the corporations hurt us as much as they helped us, even though we had money from them?
Like I said, I'm the 61st Speaker of the House, we need to make sure the Democrats don't get in power. We would appreciate the grassroots falling in line with the Republican Party, but maybe we've done something that they're upset with us now.
Oh, yeah. I would say so. I know millions of people. I would imagine there are millions of people who have left the party because of the Romney fiasco. So the question is, how are you going to get them back? You can't replace them. Corporations can give you money, but they can't give you votes. They can't give you 2 million votes or 3 million votes. They can give you $2-3 million. But what's money without votes?
Well, you have a point there. You know, normally I don't read legislation, but except maybe I cram the exam. But you know what? I'll tell you what, while we're going through these points, maybe I'll make some comments. These points about Gingrich's proposals to rebuild the Republican Party.
Okay, well, as we do so, we will continue on with this memo. And the next one, number 12, is short. And it says, how did Obama team manage such enormous turnout? Which we'll mention that later because I think I know what Chris might say on this. What components of message and mechanism went into that historic result? Could it be matched by a Republican effort? And if so, how?
Yeah, I'm going to get a recording of me. Just play it. But there is one thing I want to say is, again, I say 8 million less votes. It wasn't some miraculous turnout.
No.
And I think that is really important. And I wish I could connect with Newt directly on this, because if Obama would have gotten the same votes as he did 4 years ago, I would say I get the point. You know what I mean? Because that was a landmark. But when it was almost 8 million votes less, I don't buy it as much. I don't buy the intensity of that concept yet. And maybe there's something I'm missing there. But, you know, we were less than a million less than McCain. So, you know, even though Romney was, you know, did less than McCain, it was just under a million. But Obama did almost 8 million, had almost 8 million less votes. So, you know, the question is how do we, you know, I mean, if they're losing votes because of who they're running and what they've done to the economy and everything else, then why aren't we gaining those votes? That's the question to me as a numbers guy, is if he lost 8 million, why didn't Romney get him? Oh, I know why, because Romney sucked. I'm not saying as a person, don't get me wrong, anybody. Sure, he's a wonderful guy and a wonderful father and a wonderful husband and a wonderful leader of his church. And okay, I've said my piece. As a politician, he was terrible. I have never been so embarrassed by somebody I was told to vote for. I would watch him
Bob
interview.
Dole was pretty bad, too.
I would watch him interview, Robert. And that guy would change the topic literally in the same sentence. He would say two different things, and nobody would call him on it. I mean,
yeah,
I didn't know what he was going to say next.
Here's something I know that I found interesting with Romney, with what he said. Let me see if I can pull this up. Yeah, here's something that Romney said that I found interesting, and we'll let the folks decide.
A little history. I was born and raised here. I love this state. It seems right here. Trees are the right height.
I love carpet.
I like seeing the lakes. I love the lakes. There's something very special here, the Great Lakes, but also all the little inland lakes that dot the parts of Michigan.
I love desk.
Rick, are you just looking at things in the office and saying that you love them?
I love lamp.
I love cars. I don't know. I mean, I grew up totally in love with cars. It used to be in the 50s and 60s, if you showed me one square foot of almost any part of a car, I could tell you what brand it was, the model, and so forth. Now with all the Japanese cars, I'm not quite so good at it, but I still know the American cars pretty well.
Do you really love the lamp, or are you just saying it because you saw it?
I love lamp. I love lamp.
I love cars. I love American cars. And long may they rule the world, let me tell you. I wanted to do well.
And that was Romney. I think that could have summed up Romney's campaign. So, anyway.
All right. 59,134,000 people still voted for him. And I know people just had to, they just came out and did what they had to do once he was the stolen nominee. But the numbers of people that voted through him for the primary, that was the part that confused me.
All right, guys, look, you got your internet media thing, and we at the GOP, we have our friends. We have our distinguished friends in the media that tell America what their opinion is and how they should vote. And we sure tried well with Romney. And we had a little blip there at the national convention, but, we are doing what's best for America.
Mr. Boehner, do you know what Robert's rule of order is?
Why, yes, we do. We operate under the House strictly. Yes, we do.
Okay, so at the convention, when the Ron Paul delegates were screaming and hollering against the vote, isn't the Robert's rule at that point says that you have to go to a hand count?
Well, all I heard was USA, USA. They love this country. They love the Republican Party, USA. That's what I heard.
Yeah. We have good health insurance, right? I think you could probably get your hearing checked. That might be something you want to check into.
Well, it wasn't my hearing that was the problem. My eyes were working great that day because I just simply read from the teleprompter. That's how politics are done these days. I read from the teleprompter, it said, the ayes have it, so we passed the new rules, and you had to have eight states. I know Ron Paul, just an hour before the rules came out of committee, he had demonstrated six states. According to the previous rules, they were antiquated, outdated. You had to have five, he had six. Well, too bad. You know what, Romney was the only one who could beat Obama, so, I didn't mean to throw the young Republicans under the bus that love Ron Paul, but you know what? We had to do what we had to do for the best interests of our country and the corporations, and so we did what we had to do.
As a reminder, Mr. Boehner, I'll let you listen to this, and then we will continue on our discussion on how to defeat the liberals now and into 2014. But as a reminder, Mr. Boehner, and hopefully this will help towards defeating the liberals, as I said, now and into 2014, maybe you can remember this. Listen
and the opinion
up.
Of the chair is the ayes have it and the motion is agreed to.
Okay, so you heard all the boos and the nays. So does that ring any bells? Does that jog your memory a little bit?
Look, the chair heard it very well. The ayes had it, the nays didn't. Whatever type of opposition you had, the majority was for what was going on. I know we needed 2/3, but you know what? The majority had it. We had to move on. We're on live TV. We just had to move forward. Hey, look, okay, you guys, sorry. I need to get moving along. I have some pressing emergencies in which is to unify the Republican Party.
Don't cry.
Get the base back.
Don't cry.
Oh, it's okay. You know, I got some pressing emergencies, and particularly some midnight legislation. But you didn't hear that. All right, so I'm going to have to leave now, and I would encourage you to vote Republican.
Well, and that was it. He just hung up, and perhaps we'll hear some back from him at another time. But I guess he's got to go blow his nose somewhere. So. That was interesting. I do have someone else calling to the line, and one of the things I'd like to discuss is, of course, is moving forward and defeating liberals now and into 2014 in the context of what we heard tonight with Newt Gingrich's memo, and also what I'd like to discuss more so is, more importantly, is what will be available for conservatives to achieve victory from the liberals in the House, Senate, and the state governors moving forward. So at this time, I see 302. Your mic is live. What's on your mind?
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, 304, yes.
Okay, you said 302. Hello, this is Della
Contessa. I guess I had 202 on my line still. Thank you.
This is Della Contessa. How are you doing?
Good. How are you? Thank you for calling to the show.
I'm doing great. I'm calling because I really wanted to tell House Speaker Boehner that probably if they would stop being the party of the corporations, for the corporations, and by the corporations, they may actually get some votes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then actually would get maybe some support of some conservatives?
That's a possibility. Think about it. And then there are places that actually would support us, like Americans for Prosperity. You know, they would probably support us if we weren't so corporately funded. If we would get people like the Liberty Movement and the Tea Party, we really wouldn't need those corporations nearly as much, now would we?
No, I totally agree.
And you actually have the people, the grassroots.
Exactly.
And,
you know, you
but
said,
a,
I don't,
that's an insane
I don't know
idea,
if it was,
isn't it?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you.
Oh, I'm sorry, I just said that's an insane idea, isn't it, to actually get people behind you?
Right, well, it's moving forward. It's really going to, I knew you did touch on this, it's going to take a grassroots effort in order to have victory for conservatives. You know, I'll be honest, I'm not as worried about having Republican victory in 2014 in the House, Senate, and governors as I am to have conservatives in there. Because, I mean, if we get Republicans in and they're just the same old, and it's rhinos, then it really isn't going to make any difference.
I agree wholeheartedly. I am going to get off here because my dog is going to start barking.
Oh, there he is. Well, I'll just I'll tell you what. I could put the phone on mute, and then if you'd like to send a message in the chat, say you'd like to chime in, I'll open up the mic. How's that?
Okay, that'll work.
Okay, great. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
What I was going to say was one of the things, and we've been a couple days since I've read this document all the way through, and when we talk about the corporatism, and we talk about which is a step short of fascism, and this Keynesian economics, where you have the interference of government into the marketplace, and then through processes with the tax code that you give certain types of industries breaks for them to be more prosperous, this is what has created this corrupt system. Now, when you look at what Obama or the Democratic Party and the Republican Party years ago, the Democrat Party went towards the middle class, the poor, all the minorities and fringe groups, and the unions. The Republican Party went towards free enterprise. Well, the mistake was that they wrapped themselves around the industrial war machine, the mega corporations, and those things. Now, Americans are no longer confused about the crash in our economy. They're pissed at the big corporations, the banks, Wall Street, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're pissed off that, we're bailing these companies out every time they do stupid stuff with our money. And so the connection that the Republicans have with these monster machines, the industrial war machine and the large corporations, which are not free enterprise. They are corporatism. It's a merging between mega companies and the government. People are sick of that on both sides. And so we've got this attachment to that. And we need to break that, because I've been a free enterpriser all my life, and I cannot equate anything that I think of as free enterprise to a Romney-type personality who has made his whole money off of manipulating other people's money. And people are not fired up about that mindset, and so the Republican Party needs to step back and say, are we really representing, free enterprise, or have we become this corrupt corporatist, world order party, because that's where all this direction is going. Anyway, I just want to throw that out there. Number 13.
Number 13, the magic number 13. Okay, number 13 is data science Obama style has no relation to the Republican model of an internet politics. The Obama system is helped in data science by its 85 to 90% dominance of Silicon Valley. A few of the founders of Google and Facebook helping you design your system, you have an enormous advantage over your competitors. The challenge of social networking, micro-community building, and citizen mobilization may be second only to the challenge of including minority Americans in the GOP in determining whether Republicans decline into minority status for the next several decades.
Interesting.
Now, why would Google?
I don't think Google and Facebook are necessarily that big of an issue. I think it just takes people of internet savvy, you know, from industries to sit down and design better social networking systems. I don't see Google and Facebook as a problem as much as I see a very mixed, splintered, conservative, Republican, Liberty Party people all over the flipping map. That's what the problem is there's no coordination of effort. One of the frustrations I had was Newt had a great, you know, he had his own political Facebook page, and Newt had huge Twitter following.
Well,
you know, for a Republican old white guy, he was kind of rocking on Twitter. And
okay,
and
real quick, Chris, I'm got a update here from on Twitter, and I'm going to mention something about that later when we talk about the social networks. But 4 minutes ago, it says breaking news: House passes Senate fiscal cliff deal. I'm not sure of all the validity on that. I'm just going off by what I've seen someone say on Twitter. So just to put that out there, I'm just seeing some things being talked about there. And if we hear anything more, if anyone else hears more than want to chime in about that, I know that's something that's going on this evening that folks are interested in. Feel free to give us the updates. Thank you. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry for the interruption. I just thought people might be interested to hear that.
Fine. I'm going to okay, last thing I see on search is House to vote.
Yeah, I did. I just got, yeah, about, I'm on Twitter, and someone about 4 minutes ago put on there that the House passed the bill about 3 minutes ago.
House votes to approve fiscal cliff legislation. No, that's 14 hours ago. Yeah, I don't see anything new on a search. Okay, well, we'll hold on to that one. You know, I'm sure they folded. I haven't spent any time on this fiscal cliff thing.
I ran the emotional
gambit of it last time when Boehner, you know, sold us down the drain with the help of Ryan and Cantor and the rest of them. So I didn't really get involved in this because I knew they'd sell us down the drain. So, you know, I just didn't spend a lot of time. I figured after it's all said and done, we could have a couple conversations on it and then try to move on and figure out how to win in 2014. Back to the social media thing, and this is something that's very important because I spent a tremendous amount of time on Newt's group. But one of the challenges of social media is everybody doing their own thing. You know, there was hundreds of Newt groups. Well, that meant you had to run around and push crap, you know, 100 different times to get a message or information out. People did not coordinate those efforts. And that is one of the things. Sometimes it doesn't take data science from Facebook and Google. It takes common sense about building organizations, which really is about building people and getting people to come to the same room so you can talk to 10,000 people in one place instead of having to run around 10,000 places to talk to one person.
And
that's
speaking
one
about
of the challenges.
Yeah, I was going to say real quick, and then speaking of groups and social networks, for the folks to check out www.patriotjournalist.com or just simply type in the search engine or talk about where you put the link on your page here is patriotjournalist.com. Check that out. It is a Twitter group, social network group, that is looking to promote conservatism. So check it out. Go ahead, Chris.
No, that's fine. And then and the idea, what he's talking about, this micro community building, is a cool concept on one hand, but the challenge is you've got to have somebody, which is a people-to-people thing, not a Google, Facebook technology, but it's getting mm-hmm. people to coordinate people together and work together and have the same message and be able to, you know, if you have 100 groups, that's 100 different social networks, that's fine as long as those 100 leaders of those groups work together. It would be a lot easier if those 100 groups were one group, but mm-hmm. there's a tremendous amount of flexibility in social networking that allows everybody to go out and build their own damn group, you know, based on their own egos, need to be the man or be the woman, you know, instead of looking at the bigger picture and going, am I really helping by doing my own thing versus should I be part of somebody else's group, you know, or part of the guy that I'm trying to help get frickin' elected, maybe I should spend time on that guy's group, you know, like I.E. Newt or whoever your person is. And this is something that actually doesn't require a super scientist Google Facebook person. It's about people understanding how to build groups, how to educate, move groups of people and develop leadership and develop a cohesiveness between people so that you're not having to re-message all the time. That is, and if that's the technology that's come out of, you know, Google and Facebook, that's really actually confusing, and it needs to be simplified.
Well, and speaking of Twitter, think how much Sarah Palin used Twitter, you know, when she was running and, you know, when she's putting all those tweets out. That caused a lot of stir. Newt Gingrich, he had like 1.5 million followers on Twitter. And with that patriotjournalist.com, they have 465 members. But what that comes to is an aggregate 942,757 followers on this network. So, you know, you take all the folks who are members of the patriotjournalist.com, and then you aggregate the amount of followers of all those members, and that's, you know, almost a million folks that are part of that group. You talk about bringing things together, that can be a powerful force. And as I opening up the mic, I hear some back there. So I think that might be Kelly. Your mic is live. Are you there?
Well, hey guys, how you doing?
Hey, yeah, just opened up your mic a little bit ago. Of course, we know Kelly's come on to the show many occasions. Of course, is the author of the book and the website, The Hidden Fourth Branch. And that's thehiddenfourthbranch.com. So go ahead, Kelly.
Well, hey, thanks for having me again. I was working away on something, yada yada, big political things on the side. But anyway, somebody called me up and said, oh my gosh, John Boehner, Bonner, whatever you call him, you got to call him up and give him a piece of your mind. So I had to call up, but I guess he hung up for some, midnight legislation he's going to work on. You know, I guess he passed the fiscal cliff thing.
But you can't even run and pass it. We heard about 4 minutes ago or so. That the House passed, maybe that's where you had to run off to, had to pass that the fiscal cliff.
Yeah, well, you know, Congress and the executive office were so close to the fiscal cliff, why didn't they just, like, jump off and we start fresh? I don't know, but anyway, it's kind of a little subtle idea, you know, hit the reset button, I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, I would have loved to get Bonner a piece of my mind. Oh, geez. You know, the thing he did at the National Convention, the GOP. I mean, my gosh, come on, reading from a teleprompter? Are you serious? Shoving down our throats the possibility of a broker convention? It's like, you know, Romney, oh yeah, he's the only one who can be elected. And, well, that didn't work, but a broker convention, you know, my gosh, you can't have anybody like Ron Paul or Gingrich be the president because, like, they could actually straighten the country out. It's like, I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, you know, I got lucky to hear the lady that called in wanting to ask Bonner about the corporations. I'm like, way to go, lady. You know, yeah, we got a fundamental problem with these corporations and how they run the GOP, and it's kind of spooky these days. But anyway, I'm so bummed I missed my opportunity to give Bonner a piece of my mind.
Well, it might be a good thing that you didn't, Kelly, because, you know, my concern is if you did that, he might start crying, and I really wouldn't want to have any of that on the show. So that probably would have been for the best. So, but now we're discussing.
I did like how he actually thought about. See, my friend was telling me play by play. I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta get on. But they were giving a play by play over the phone. Yeah, he's talking about Newt's memo and something about, you know, I might actually read this. Like, I don't normally read bills, but, you know, I might want to read the memo to help the Republican Party. I was like, what a concept. So, I don't know, with that, let's continue with Newt's memo.
So I think I'm more interested in helping conservatives, you know, than the party, because, I mean, if the party becomes conservative, you know, better for that. But anyway, we'll go on to 14. He put, the gap between Republican and Democrat pollsters is ominously large. The shock many Republican analysts and, quote, experts got election night was extraordinary. It should lead to the deep, long rethinking of Republican assumptions about the country and the campaign. In my case, it is leading me to 6 months of in-depth questioning, learning, and analysis at Gingrich Productions. It is true that the Obama team was doing 9,000 calls a night internally, connected to their data scientists, while also using traditional polling to represent a world no Republican can match today. That is at the heart of knowing reality better than your opponent, and it has to be honestly and courageously addressed. We'll let that sink in for a few moments before anyone would like to chime in on that.
Honestly and courageously addressed. Wow. Do you mean the good old boy system network isn't working anymore?
Well, it looks good. It hasn't actually, you know, worked for quite some time. But, you know, Newt, I think, as we said earlier, is trying to save the Republican Party. We'll see if he can get any fruit to his labors on that. But we've just seen just moments ago what the Republicans did with the fiscal cliff. And, you know, much to – we kind of knew that was going to already happen, but, you know, there
well,
you
here's,
have it.
Here's a – okay. All right. I was reading the article on the house, you know, selling it sold. But, you know, I guess here's the question I have to ask. Who gives a crap what the polls say? I mean, here's the problem. You know, if you do these polls and you find out what people are, what's important to people, and you make these calls and you do all the sophisticated crap, and you don't have a message, and you have a guy like Romney, who cares? In other words, what's really interesting to me is that they spend all their time polling all these people, but they never called all the people they disenfranchised to the primary. The Newt supporters, the Paul supporters, the Tea Party people, the people actually care that Romney was a liberal Democrat in sheep's and wolf's clothing, sheep's clothing. So, you know, you can pull yourself to death, but if you don't reach the heart and soul of the people that you expect to get votes from, who gives a crap?
They want their votes. But yet they're willing to push, you know, push the base of their party, or what was once the base of the party. And I made this analogy during the primaries, and is that, you know, you take an elephant and you chop off its legs. Well, where's that elephant going to go? It's not going to go anywhere. Well,
it's got a trunk.
Well, it's going to drag itself on its trunk, yeah, but then some poachers will come along and take that too, along with the tusks, in order to get their ivory.
Frog eats elephants.
Eat rhinos, leave the elephants alone. And since we're bringing up elephants, I'll take this opportunity to guide folks to the www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com website and go to the Get Involved page, and you will see a button there that you can click, and it'll take you to the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, in which for only $50 a year, you can sponsor a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. Please check it out. Makes wonderful late belated Christmas gift for someone, or just a very great cause to do. And also you can look at what they are doing to curtail poaching over there in Africa as well. So at this time, I see that we've got about 15 minutes of live show. And, of course, the last 5 minutes, I'd like to take that time to close things out. We may go into extended edition, as we've want to do on, I'd have to admit, numerous occasions, which is okay. So if we do so, that's fine. But if you'd like to make it into the recording time, if we go that way, either to chime in or listen, please call in at area code 347-945-7428. Or if you do not call in at the time, we do go to extend it. You can listen to the rest of the show or any of the subsequent shows by going to the archives and listening to them there. So we will continue on with number 14. If there's anything else that anybody wants to chime in more on that, and then we'll move on to the next question.
Move on.
Okay, we'll move on. 15. It says, in storytelling and narrative development, the mismatch of resources is as great as the internet capabilities. Hollywood, New York City, academics, and I'm going to put in there academia, the news media and trial lawyers are the dominant storytellers in American life. One of every one of them is overwhelmingly 80% plus Democrat. Republicans have complained about the inarticulateness and communications ineffectiveness of the party for the entire time I've been involved, went back to August 1958. This is the third greatest strategic challenge, along with minorities and internet community. We'll chime in first with you, Kelly, and see what you've got, and then we'll go with Chris, and then I'll chime in myself. Kelly?
Well, let's see. NPR has phenomenal influence. Bummer they can't make it as a private entity. They have to have government funding. But they are brilliant in telling a firsthand account of, oh, you know, my heart bleeds for this person. Oh, my heart is wide open. I will then listen to the rest of the junk NPR has to push forward into our heads. Artistic license is extremely powerful. Extremely powerful. However, brilliantly stated by Gingrich, the mismatch of resources, mismatch of facts, pardon me, I just a little frustrated there, but the mismatch of facts, oh, I'm sorry, did it again. There was a brilliant question proposed by Michael Medved. Brilliant question. No other one was able to answer it. But here's the question. Why is it that Hollywood actors, they come out and they go into the political arena and they're typically liberals and they're way out there. On the other hand, people in sports, they come out into politics and they're conservative. Why is this? I'm like, oh, I'm raising my hand. And, you know, I got the answer, teacher. All right. The answer is simply this. Hollywood is a world of fantasy. They create their own reality. In creating their own reality, they go into this, oh, what a wonderful world we could be, you know, kumbaya, let's hold hands. You know, I'd like to teach the world to sing, you know, that Coke song. So they have this, like, delusional sense of what things should be, and it impacts their whole thinking. It's creating the reality they want. On the other hand, why are sports folks conservative? Because they happen to live in a world where they play by the rules. Basketball court, you bump someone real hard, it's called a foul. There are called, or these things called consequences. It's kind of a law of nature, cause and effect, consequences. The people in sports, they figure it out. This induces an enormous amount of common sense, i.e., an Iowa farm boy with a degree or two in engineering. Look, I got common sense. you want to do this political experiment like the Great Society? It has failed. That is a Hollywood mentality. And so with this great statement of his, mismatch of resources, you should include mismatch of realistic possibilities, we have, I don't know, I can't explain it, but the American culture has succumbed. They have succumbed to the surreal and think it could be possible, and they end up voting for Democrats. Every one of them, he says, every one of them is overwhelming 80% plus Democrat because of the stupid mentality where they throw out the natural law of cause and effect. That's why farm boys would make incredible politicians. They understand the laws of cause and effect. I got a liberal friend. His name's David. Gosh, I love this guy to pieces. We'll go have a beer every now and then. Great guy. He's a liberal, but he just happens to believe in gun rights. Oh, that's right. He was raised on a farm in eastern Washington. Or was it eastern Oregon? Anyway, he understands the law of cause and effect. You don't take away your guns. But yet he's liberal, loves Obama, all this kind of stuff, hates corporations. The cause and effect in his life has caused him to realize we need to keep our guns. I don't get this incredible mental disconnect that people have. And the liberals, oh my gosh. One day he said something really funny. He said, oh, conservatives, you can't shoot them, but you can compost them.
Oh, jeez.
I'm like, well, you know what? I like to say that about liberals. You can't teach them to think, but you can compost them.
That's what Boehner is doing to conservatives now. He's pretty much composting them. I mean, seriously. So
yeah. Once a month, I miss that my chance to give them a piece of my mind, but that's another story.
Well, Chris, what say you? Oh, God, I hate this. I said it. That sounds like something, what's his face? O'Reilly used to say. Ugh, got to get that out of my head. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. First of all, you're not gonna ever get the majority of the actors, the academics, and these people to change their message because they're liberals and they have some false fantasy of what socialism could create. And the only reason that that message still has power is these people are influential and we haven't totally crashed yet because we can print money. Well, it's coming. So that message will change a little bit when this economic system takes the next, there's probably two or three corrections coming because we've got another debt ceiling to stack on top of QE 1, 2, and 3. So anyway, here's something that I had written on this point was the first thing that Republicans and conservatives need to do is they need to break from Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, and they need to get away from these people that have been the main messaging source for a long time because they've proved themselves inadequate at fighting the battle, just like the Republicans in the House, the Boehner, the Cantors, the Ryans, and the rest of them, McConnell. They can't talk. They can't message. They can't take the battle, forward. They're always reactive. Well, Fox there's a few good people on there, don't get me wrong. But for the most part, all they are is just reactive news of the day, and they get up and they just feed to the base. They're not changing the dialogue in this country, and they're not educating people. And so what we need to do is we need to build a whole new information network, including the Internet, and reach to the people directly. I cannot fathom how many people don't listen to the conservative talk show radios anymore.
Once in a while
I don't watch Fox anymore, and there's got to be a lot of people that are really disgusted because they couldn't trip over themselves fast enough to lick Romney's boots. And so I think it's really important that if when you're talking about this dialogue of storytelling and the narrative development is that we need new sources to be the voice that reaches people. And that's going to be a very important thing to look forward into the future. That's my input on that question or point.
Oh, no, I definitely agree with that, Chris. Definitely agree with that. And, you know, we said it for, you know, while even during the election, you know, primaries and in the general election is, you know, Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, you know, Sean Hannity, which, you know, I kind of liked him the best of all of them. They really let down the conservatives, you know, this season, especially when they, you know, you're kowtowing to Romney and the Romney campaign and make it seem like, oh, well, Romney's the only one who could truly beat Obama. And we all knew that wasn't the case, you know, but, you know, they really did.
Well,
the
there's a whole new wave.
There's a
whole new wave of people. I'm sorry, Robert, but there's a whole new wave of people that I've learned about through this primary. I'm not going to try to quote anybody right now. I don't have the list up. I'm not going to go looking for it, you know, in the last 6 minutes of the show. But there's a whole new wave of people rising up, just like there's a whole wave of Tea Party House and Senate.
I'm sorry, Chris, real quick, but we do have someone who'd like to chime in. We do only have 5 minutes left of live time, so we will be going into an extended version, but I did want to let him in. We know him well as Randy, or Stufflebean, and I've opened up your mic, Gunny. There's another way we go by you. So welcome to the show. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Happy New Year, everyone. And
Happy New Year.
Been listening, and, you know, I'm almost to the point where I'm like, why are you even talking about the Republican Party anymore? I mean, they are, you know, I almost want to think about it in terms of that cell phone commercial. You know, that was so 15 seconds ago, you know? I mean, to continue down that path is going to be to the destruction of this country. And all the talking heads that you talked about, the only mission that they are to do is one of two things: make money, which is probably their number one goal. And the only way they're going to make money is if they stay with the Republican Party. If they go off of the beaten path, they are not going to have their following, and they give everybody these little fuzzy, you know, feel-good kind of things like, oh, we're battling the Republican Party. Yeah, right. Get a grip. You're not doing anything. And that's the – Chris, you're right. You know, until we start going down different trails and different paths, it's going to continue to be screwed. And I had posted not too long ago the thing that happened down in Massac County, Illinois, where the Republicans and Democrats you know, had their thing, but I won't go down that trail right at this moment because I know you're getting close to your time, Robert, and so I'll back off the mic here for a minute and let you finish your objective here, and then we'll go into the recording because I think this is an important example to demonstrate why it's so important.
Cool. Okay, thank you very much, Randy, and sorry, Chris, for interrupting you. I just know I wanted to bring it in before
I thought Randy left the country.
Moved to Ireland after he's seen our, you know, it's part of our conversation about third parties systems, which of course people can listen to that show on the archives. But I'd like to take the last 3 minutes to thank, of course, the folks who called in tonight, and also for the folks listening in live and who will or are now in the archives listening to the show or from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. Of course, the other venues that the show can be listened to. If you are new to the show and you like what you hear tonight, follow the show just by clicking the little follow button underneath the show's archive. And also check out, well, we've got three shows I want to put out here. One is the Coalition of – these all can be found on Blog Talk Radio. Look for the Coalition of Freedom show. You can also find the Tex and Rex show. And you can also find the Constitutionally Correct show here on Blog Talk Radio. Just do a search. I believe they are all can be found on Conservative Politics on Blog Talk Radio. So I hope to see everyone again. This will be only about a minute and a half left of the live section, so hope to see you again. And, of course, if you do not call in at 347-945-7428 to listen to the live portion of the extended broadcast, you can, of course, go to the archives at a later show. And please check out the website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. and check out the Get Involved page, where you'll see some wonderful links and some article links to articles, as well as to the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, in which for only $50 a year you can sponsor a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. And also check out, when we talk about social media, the PatriotJournalist.com. And that would be the Patriot Journalist Network. We will move on to our callers, and I'm going to look at the switchboard. If anyone would like to chime in, I do see some new callers in. Just push the 1 on your number dial, and I will open up your mic. But this time, since I cut off a few folks before the live portion, thank you very much for letting me finish things up, Randy. So if you'd like to continue, go on. And then we'll move to Chris and then Kelly, and then we've got some other people who would like to chime in. We'll bring them in, too. Thank you, gentlemen.
Sure. Thanks, Robert. Well, you know, one of the things that happened just a few short weeks ago down in Massac County, like they've done across this nation, and this is the one thing I think really it is so corrupt the way it's done and the way it's handled. I think, you know, I don't see how it hasn't been made illegal already, but the idea that you have a candidate who runs for election and then 2 weeks later resigns, wins the election and then resigns, so that the Democrat or the Republican, whichever it is, both of them do it, so that they can simply put in the candidate that they want to, knowing that that candidate may likely not have made the grade and gotten elected. So what they do is they let the person who had the seat go ahead and run, win the election, then they resign, and then they just plug in whoever the Sam Hill they want to put in there. And I think as...
Wow.
And they do that across the nation. And so this is what...
And these are local levels, Randy?
Primarily county levels. There's even one that's going on congressionally in Missouri. There's a person who won the election who's resigning as of the second week of January. And it looks like what they're going to do now is they're possibly going to have a special election on that particular one. But, I mean, they do that sort of thing across this nation, and they were doing that down in Massac County. Well, according to state legislation, if the person is a Democrat, they have to replace that person with a Democrat. If that person is a Republican, they have to replace that person with a Republican. Now, here in Illinois, you are not, quote-unquote, registered as a Republican or a Democrat. You're only registered as a voter. And the only thing that really kind of associates you with one of those parties is if, one, you've been a candidate for one of those parties, or two, if you have pulled one of those parties' ballots during the primaries. That kind of makes the association. Well, it just so happens that the Democrat is the one who resigned, and the Democrat leader in Massac County was replacing that Democrat with a Republican. And a Republican who had some baggage, quite frankly. And the Republicans were not saying anything about it. And
this is so weird. This is almost like a sci-fi.
Yeah, isn't it? And you know, when the Republicans and Democrats start working together, you're in danger, right? So the Constitution Party is a...
You mean like fiscal cliffs and things of that nature?
Yeah, exactly. So what happened?
Hey, Randy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Randy, Kelly here. You know, you mentioned, you know, when Republicans and Democrats work together, you know what the reality is? I'm sorry to break this to you. The reality is they have the appearance, prima facie, if you're in legal terms, the appearance that they present to the American people is that they're fighting each other left and right, but back door, you know, in the back dark room, they're working together. That's
absolutely
reality.
And so what happened is the Constitution Party is an established party in Massac County. So there's three established parties. Now, we haven't gotten anybody elected yet. We're working on that. but the party is established there in Massac County. So according to state law, the Democrats had to notify both the Republicans and the Constitution Party of this appointment that they're making. And so when the Constitution Party sees this, they're like, hey, hold on. You guys are violating the law here. Well, they actually went ahead and made the appointment. But so the Constitution Party chairman down there writes a letter to the editor. He got on the phone with several lawyers to get some legal counsel. And if they proceeded with what they were doing, the Constitution Party was going to bring a lawsuit against the Democrat Party down there. The first step would have been tried to appeal to the Democrat Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, and see if there couldn't be some legal relief there. And then about a week or so after the person accepted the appointment, he then sent in his official resignation. Now, this right here should tell you and color a very, very, very vivid picture here about how important it is to have other parties involved, because neither the Republicans nor the Democrats are going to police themselves, nor are they going to police each other. It's only when you get this disinterested, quote unquote, third party out there, well, actually, I should say a very interested third party. And this was a case where the Constitution Party protected the citizens of Massac County. Now, here's, in addition, one of the things that they had proposed is they actually backed a particular person and made their, because in the legal proceedings of this whole effort here, the Constitution Party gets to make their suggestion as to who they would back for this appointment, and so does the Republicans. And the Constitution Party backed this one person who was a pretty good particular Democrat. And what it was is that this person, actually the seat that was vacated was a treasurer's seat. And in Massac County, they also have a deputy treasurer. Well, what the Constitution Party proposed is that the chairman appoint the deputy as the full-fledged treasurer and to leave the deputy's position open, thereby saving the county over $100,000 over the next 2 years. This is why it is so clear and such evidence why we need multiple parties in the system. And until we get that, folks, you're going to keep whining just and keep listening to Rush Limbaugh, and you'll get your feel goods about, oh, we're fighting the Republican Party, you know, we're pointing out the corruption and we're cleaning it up. Yeah, right, my dying, you know what, patootie, right? So that's what I got to say about it, is that, you know, this is the clear, complete evidence of why we need multiple parties. Only when we get this system in place will we start. You don't have to worry about, you know, going and holding this senator's feet to the fire. We'll do it. We'll get him out of there.
Wow. Well, I got some breaking news, guys. Are you ready for this?
Yep.
All right. American Majority Action spokesman Ron Meyer told Breitbart News late Tuesday that enough House Republicans have banded together in an effort to unseat House Speaker John Boehner from his position. They just need later to take up the mantle. I was like, whoa. So obviously our voices have been heard in on the Hill, and they're looking at unseating House Boehner. They got at least 20 Republican members who influence another 20. Boehner may not be able to make it. We do have... Yeah, Meyer said the conservatives have considered House Majority Leader Eric Cantor to take the helm after Bonner. Now, why is House Speaker so important? House Speaker,
what was that?
I have no idea.
That was me commenting on Cantor.
Oh, okay. I just heard a bunch of noise there for a second. Go ahead.
Yeah,
okay,
you, stick your tongue, you stick your tongue out and you go,
Okay.
Well, I quickly, like, okay, Speaker of the House, if Obubu and Biden are removed due to certain things like a kill list or Benghazi or Fast and Furious or yada, 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 the Speaker of the House becomes president, okay? That's in the Constitution. So I'm quickly researching cancer. Oh, yeah, they see NRA approved him. Yay. See a bunch of people applauding. He's from Virginia. Here's my good friend, what's his name? Paul Ryan in Ashland, Virginia. Yeah, that's my buddy Paul Ryan. He supports Paul Ryan.
For the,
yeah.
Yeah. He, to my understanding, from what I read just a little bit ago, moments ago, in fact, that he indeed voted for the fiscal cliff legislation.
Okay. Well, he's got this mix of. I'm not sure if he knows what his own identity is, much less the identity of the country, much less the ability to represent us regarding the Constitution. Okay. Okay. Hold on. Here we go. Here's a post by Eric Cantor, July 4, 2012. Happy Independence Day. Here we have a picture of the Founding Fathers standing in Independence Hall in Philadelphia, standing before George Washington, the famous classic artistic painting of, here's the Constitution, sign it please. And then he goes, oh yeah, we got to support Romney, left and right. Romney, my good friend Paul Ryan, is this guy another rhino, or is he just not know who the hell he is?
Can't that sink
soon? Chris, have you done research on Cantor?
He's a rhino.
Gosh damn it!
What? I said that when you started.
Yeah. Well, there's a motion to get out Bonner. Well, let's see.
Let's put it this way. Okay. And this is where my mind works. We don't have any elections till 2014 except for Speaker and Priebus and a whole bunch of shit that can happen between, you know, with that, the, you know, House and Senate and laws and finances and everything else. So we got 2 years of what we have. I mean, there ain't nothing going to change. All right. So in that process, it would be nice to have, and I hate to say this, but anybody besides Boehner. You know, that's kind of cool.
Well, here's what I'm thinking is, you know, I would like to see, you know, if there's going to be anybody to replace Wins Priebus, I'd like to see that, you know, him be replaced as well, just because I think it would help out conservatives. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'd like to see him replaced with Newt Gingrich. And then while I'm looking at the switchboard, I do see some callers in there. So if you'd like to chime in this evening in the extended version, just push the 1 on your number dial and let me know that you'd like to chime in. Go ahead, Chris.
What?
Oh, I thought you interrupted when I was...
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, I totally get what Randy's saying. I get it. We need...
Mm-hmm.
Three parties. We need four parties. We need
five kinds
of things. But right now, it's all everything's closed for 2 years. We have got to do the best we can with what we have, and we've got to stop. You know, we need people. There are people in that House and Senate who are fighting, you know, on a conservative level and voting against things. The problem is the leadership in the Senate, McConnell and Boehner. I mean, those two are, you know, look like they're like that rhino on my Facebook page, you know, the rhino with the face in them.
Right.
You know, it'd be really nice to get rid of these people and potentially have somebody in there that would block Obama from getting everything he wants. And here's what people don't understand about the fiscal cliff and why I didn't spend any time on this, because I knew they would fold.
Right,
but,
yeah, me too.
But Obama is already setting them up for the debt ceiling increase, and as soon as he did his little speech, his next move was to threaten the Republicans about the debt ceiling increase. Boehner is – how in the hell did he ever become the leader? I mean, his
I can tell you why.
The start of his career was ousting one of the most effective speakers we've had. And I mean, that's his whole career. He started as a traitor. So, I mean, it's just mind-boggling that he's made it this far.
Well, truth be told, I believe it was in that 352, I see you'd like to chime in. I'll make this comment, and then we'll bring you in, and then we'll move to Randy and then Kelly. But I think, you know, politics had a lot to do with it, because remember, you know, when he came in, you know, Ohio, as it usually is a, you know, pretty big influential state, and I believe that had a big part to play just for the very fact where he came from, you know, state-wise. And two, I think, you know, the Rhino Arm, you know, who's in power now, knew that, you know, Boehner, of course, they know he's weak, and they know he's a rhino, and he would have been the perfect person for those three reasons to be the Speaker of the House. And then anyone like to chime on that, that's fine. But first, I'd like to bring in 352. Your mic is live. Where are you from, and what's on your mind?
Oh, this is Harriet from Ocala.
Oh, hi, Harriet. Yes. Okay.
Okay, hi, everybody. Hi, Randy and everybody. I just wanted to say that either today or yesterday, I picked up an item that said Boehner has a big enough group of supporters who will carry him through the election. Of course, that can change, but that had been on the website. He has a big enough backing of supporters, and so I guess it's political.
Who will
carry him
through? Stay.
Yeah, who will carry him through the election? Now I don't know. We'll see what works out. You know what the truth will
Obama
be,
will like
be known.
That.
Huh?
Obama will like that.
Obama has said, and I've said this time and time again, Obama has said that the Speaker is staying. I've heard him say that. The Speaker
Obama
is
said
staying.
That?
Yes, he did.
Well, that's
yes,
because the puppeteers, I'm sorry to interrupt here, Harry.
No,
I
okay.
love your opinions.
I'm bringing this up for conversation because I don't know.
Okay, well, the puppeteers know what the hell's going on. They know, hey, you know what, Obama's going to be the president. Boehner's going to be. So, Obama, why don't you tell what your adversary is up to? But he's not really your adversary. He's a pretend adversary because, you know, they play these games and they still pass our will because we're the puppeteers.
Right. He needs those kind of people so he can get his work done. And his work is not in support of the country. It's against the country. And I'm sure he scares everybody to death with threats and everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
we
got to go back to a fundamental principle coined by Daniel Webster.
Yes.
This was brilliant. This was in the 1800s. By the way, Daniel Webster was a statesman. Yes, he did some goofy things, but yes, he was a statesman. That means what? He was representing the best interest of his state.
Yeah.
Which, i.e., prevent the federal government from growing and growing and becoming a monster, because the founding fathers suffered tyranny under a monster. All right. So, Daniel Webster said, hey, look, he says in the Hall of Congress, government passes laws with the best of intentions.
Hopefully, yeah.
Only to ultimately produce tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, the Democrats, the Republicans, the Republicats, the Democrats, whatever you call them, they are basically deceiving us, okay? These words are coming in my head as I'm speaking here. They're deceiving us. Oh, yeah, we're looking out for your best interest. Oh, yeah, we are. Vote for us. We're in on it together. I guess I want to get Randy's input on this because he's standing on the outside. Are you still there, Randy? You're standing on the outside seeing the games played. I love Randy's perspective right now.
Oh, yes.
Definitely
and
go,
like
Randy.
Like I say, it may not work out like this. It may be very well. You know, people can change their mind on the spur of the moment when it comes up to voting, so I can't be held to this. I can only be held to the fact that this is what I've read on the Internet and heard from Obama. That's all I can verify.
Okay, I got a comment on Obama, okay? The NDAA. The NDAA, well, you know, I don't believe that we should really do this, you know, and I'm really hesitant to sign the NDAA. And, you know, I guess Congress wants it. I'm going to do it. Oh, wait. Rachel Maddow, flaming liberal. Sorry, I'm upset right now, but I just got to speak my mind. Flaming liberal, Rachel Maddow. She exposed Obama's plan for indefinite detention months and months before he signed it, but he plays a nice actor. Well, I don't think it's a good idea. I don't know. I was like, okay, I'll hesitantly sign it. No, I don't want to. Yeah, I was like, bullshit. It's all acting. It's all acting. You wanted to do this from day one. Maddow documented it months before. You want the NDAA. Okay, stop the games. Tell us your heart. Tell us where you're at. Maybe we will or won't vote for you, but stop playing the actor games and tell us what you're really about. How do these people get elected? Oh, that's right. They deceive the American people.
Exactly. And you know what? Our Constitution is asleep now, and the health care bill has taken over. And and so that entices me to work harder in the very nice conservative Tea Party group that we have here. They are just wonderful. And I would like to have other people promote conservative Tea Party groups. And there we can get a lot of strength going to forge ahead. If nothing else, we can at least save the conservative party, or we could attempt to. Now, there's one person that I am impressed with, that I am watching, and that's Dr. Rand Paul, because he came out with the truth about the tax bill and everything that they voted on, and he told us what it is and what it isn't truthfully, and no one forced him to say it, and no one from the third-party candidates came out in defense of this. So Dr. Paul is on my watch list, and I hope everyone else will look to him, and hopefully, or maybe he will run for president. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be. But I am getting impressed with him.
You know, he is freely saying, look, I oppose the NDAA. I oppose this. I oppose that.
Yes.
He's having videos.
Yes.
He's doing these things. And yet he did this thing this may have been his suicide in running for president in 2016, but he did endorse Mitt Romney. And
what's fascinating
about...
You can't hold everything against the person if they have the qualities to come out and show conservatism, because we don't know why he endorsed Romney.
Hold on, guys. I want to give Randy the opportunity to chime in, because you did mention two things. One, Kelly, you mentioned to get his input on something. I don't want to get too far out beyond that until he gets the opportunity to do that. And two, Harriet, you mentioned something about third parties. So I want to give Randy the opportunity
Randy
to chime in on those things. Go ahead.
Randy's the expert. Hello, Randy. Happy New Year, Randy.
Happy New Year. You know, sometimes it's very, very difficult to wear these titles. You know, I've been called a constitutional expert or a scholar, and I'm like, look, you know, really, I'm just a constitutional student. I'm just a plain old, you know, civil person who's just, you know, hacked off about the way our country's gone. But let me address real quickly the aspect of people who will endorse folks for political gain. It happened here in Illinois back in 2006. A guy by the name of Bill Brady was running for governor as a Republican candidate, and I was running for governor at that time. And I almost felt bad for running for governor, because this guy, I mean, he was talking so conservative on these issues. He was even calling for the elimination of the Board of Education within the state of Illinois, not just at the federal level. I'm like, wow, hey, boy, you know, he was talking my language. And then about a week before the primary election, he was way, way down in the polls, and there was another person by the name of Judy Bartopinka, And Judy Bartopinka was almost the exact antithesis to everything Bill Brady said he stood for. I mean, she was pro-homosexual, pro-gun control, pro-choice. I mean, just right down the what you would consider the liberal agenda. And she was the Republican, and everybody was voting. Well, we got to vote for Judy Barr because she's the only one who can take on Rod Blagojevich. She's the only one who can win. So we got to vote for Judy Barr Topinka. And so I gave Bill Brady a call a week before the election, and I said, "Look, Bill, you're way down. You know Judy Barr Topinka is going to get the election. So why don't you just come to the Constitution Party? I can almost guarantee with your name out there, we will get on the ballot and we'll win this election. I'll drop to lieutenant governor. I'll be, you know, just call me the hammer. That, you know, hey, I'll be your lackey." And he says, "Well, no, I've got all these people who are supporting me and expecting me to, you know, stay within the Republican Party. So I'll stay here and do what I can." So he stayed. And within two weeks of Judy Barr Topinka getting the election, he not only supported her, he endorsed her. Okay, now this is a guy who's pro-life. He was pro-gun. He was pro-family. I mean, you know, just everything. But then I just saw him just throw out every single thing he said he stood for to support somebody who is the absolute opposite. In fact, I think she was even more liberal than the Democrat, Rod Blagojevich, and he's in jail right now.
Yeah,
so,
he is.
So, you know, it isn't – now I know – what I know about Bill Brady is I know that he is now willing to sacrifice every principle he's got for political gain. And so it's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when – he is willing to sacrifice those principles. And so Rand Paul has done, he's told me right now that he will sacrifice his principles for political gain. It's not a matter of if. He's already demonstrated it. So, you know, when I look at these people, I look at what they stand for, and are they willing to bow to political pressure for a little bit of political gain? And I think that's exactly what he did. And that's why I'm going to be running for senator here in Illinois this coming for 2014.
Well, God bless you, Randy. I hope you win. You know what? There is, gosh, this is so frustrating.
But
how
you know what
this?
I was thinking, Randy? I just want to say one little thing. An issue before the House and the Senate as life determination for a country, as important as these issues are, everybody able should stand up and make a stand.
Absolutely.
That's where I'm coming from. And that's why I said that, because I don't know. I can only evaluate on what he said. Now, I don't know these political things and these hook-ons and hook-offs and favors and things, because, you know, I don't know that. So I appreciate your input, because now I have an education to better understand where sometimes these people are coming from, and that's very important. But that does not change the fact that such an issue in the country that is really life-determining, because once something like this is passed, it'll never, never be unchanged. And everybody and every party should stand up and fight against it, because that would have been better for the country. Now,
well, let me.
You know what? That's where I'm coming from.
Right. And what you know, you're talking about the health care bill, but do you realize that this year we are now going to be celebrating 100 years of the year that tyranny got its foothold in America, when the 16th and the 17th Amendments was ratified, and when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, 1913. We are this year now coming up on those anniversaries.
That.
And that's where the real tyranny came in. I mean, Obama, this Obamacare and everything else is just a manifestation of that. And until we get people who understand the Constitution willing to take a stand for it no matter what, we're going to continue heading down this path. And I'm telling you, there I think I'm coming up with the term that I am an optimistic pessimist or a pessimistic optimist. I'm not sure which it is, but you know, I there's a battle to fight, and I have hope. But you know, when I see what's going on, you know, with this whole Boehner thing, you know, I think really Boehner's probably going to remain there, and there's going to be a whole bunch of people that's going to have this, you know, like, well, I supported this other person, I tried to get rid of him, and so now I've got a kind of a feel good kind of thing. It's almost like that whole feel good thing about when everybody was signing the petition to secede from the union. And you know what? I've never heard a response from that yet.
No, just to occupy folks' time for a while. And I find it interesting that was coming from the White House.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, what we've got is that we've got, you know, it's a drug. It's a drug. It placates people, you know. They take this drug of, hey, I fought the battle for a little bit, and I've got this whole feel-good thing, and yet the country still continues down. They turn this blind eye, and then they take that another Republican pill again and get that feeling like, okay, here's our time again. And it's, you know, until we get people off the drugs, I don't know. I don't know whether I have hope or not for this country.
Yeah. I can understand that.
Kelly here, I want to throw out this thought, okay? This is so frustrating. We are operating under fear. We have a two-party system that, oh, the Democrats are evil and let us be in power and continue evil. But at least it's under our control of power. All right, okay. You know, we'll call off the Tea Party. We'll do whatever it takes to get the votes because we're putting people in fear. Okay, put the Democrats in power. The Democrats on their side, they're saying the same stinking thing. What happens when you operate life without fear? I can tell you endless personal stories of, oh, I'm not playing by this fear game anymore. I'm done. This is me. I'm moving forward. You don't like what I... Tough. I don't care. I am not going to operate under your fear mechanisms. And I'm sorry to say, the American people are operating under fear, and because of that, they go to the Democrats and the Republicans. We have got to change this. How do we do this? Sorry to say, but this goes back to spiritual. This goes down to personal identity. This turns into a situation where God finally steps in and says, all right, America, I'm going to put you in a lot of pain. Through this pain, you'll seek me out. When you seek me out, you realize you don't have to live under fear anymore. That's when we're going to start making the right moral choices and get rid of these jokers and get rid of the two-party system. We overcome our fear. We overcome our politics. I mean, I'll say that again. We overcome our fear. We overcome the politics, and we will win. How do we get Americans there? I don't know, because it's a very deep, inside-the-heart issue. It's frustrating, but that's how we're operating, and we cannot have... You know, like the race you were just talking about, Randy, we just cannot have these people giving in to fear. Oh, my gosh, we don't want the Democrats to come in. It's like, look, you're worried about a guy who's being investigated by a grand jury who is indicted in 19 counts, convicted of 17. It's like, what a joke. You're operating under fear when this guy is a schmuck, later exposed. What is going on? This is how much our fear rules us.
Right.
And
well,
we've got to figure this out.
To go on that, you know, take off on that. You know, just imagine this. Blagojevich was already under federal investigations. People knew it throughout the state of Illinois. This was before the 2006 elections. Okay? And guess what? They elected him again. And then, of course, you know, it took a few years before the whole thing and all that. And then he finally went to jail. But that he was already under federal investigations, and people throughout the state knew it, and they still elected him. So, you know, this is the part of pessimism with me. Are people really going to retain that complete It's beyond ignorant. I mean, it's in their face. You know, are they going to retain their stupidity and continue down this trail? Have we totally lost our, absolutely lost the moral compass? And can we get that back? You know, these are questions. Unless we can come up with the answer, you know, a positive answer, I'm not so sure that this country has much hope left.
Well, one of the defining definitions of where we need to go, and it's not mental, it's emotional. In the movie The Matrix, Morpheus and Neo were standing in on top of a building, and it was the jump program exercise where he had to jump from one building to another, okay? Morpheus said it brilliantly. Looked in Neo's eyes, and he said, "You gotta let it all go, Neo. Fear, doubt, disbelief. Free your mind." And then Morpheus ran, jumped, they made it across to the next building. This brilliant. Brilliant. You have to let it all go, Neo. Free your mind. Let go of fear, doubt, and disbelief. But the American people are not there. They're not doing it. I don't understand this, but it's frustrating.
And at this point, I haven't heard from Chris for a little bit, so I'd like to bring the mic over to you, Chris, and see if there's anything you'd like to chime in on what you've heard so far.
No, I'm just listening because you guys are kind of like all over the place, and my mind is I must be tired because it's getting hard for me to keep up.
Happy New Year, Chris.
Go ahead. No. Well, I played like 20 freaking games of racquetball today. So, you know, one of the things, like what I was saying is, and I, you know, and I'll say this again to Randy, you know, coming into 2014, I will promote the crap out of the people that they put up, you know. But between now and 2014, there's things that I am trying to accomplish and help happen. You know, if I can be part of helping getting Boehner out of there and getting somebody else in there that'll fight Obama and not hand him everything on a silver platter, I'm going to do it. It isn't about Republican to me. It's about this is the House, this is the Senate, these are the people in it, and I've got to try to, you know, do what I can with what I got.
And I don't disagree with that, Chris. I don't disagree with that at all, except in this particular regard, is that until we get a multiple party system in place, you know, all you're doing is just prolonging the agony. And like I said, I'm not dissing that whole thing, because we do need people to be able to hold this train and slow it down as much as we can. Nobody's going to stop it until we get these other parties running and able to win elections. But, you know, we really need people who understand what it's going to take to get the multiple party system operating and in place and start winning elections. And I'm hoping the beginning of this year we'll start seeing some very significant growth now that we're out of the election seasons, now that we're out of the holidays. That's what I'm looking at. That's what I'm concentrating on now, is to really start building the party now so that we can start being able to bring up people that people can actually get behind and get them elected.
Now, Can I give you some input?
Sure.
Go ahead, everybody.
Go ahead, Chris. I want to follow up with something.
Okay, here's what I want to say. You know why Robert and I are going through this Newt Gingrich document? Because he's a freaking genius, and he's one of the only guys that's ever run a ground zero grassroots from the local communities to the GOPAC system that he ran, training up new politicians at local and state levels that led to the Republican Revolution in the 90s. He understands how to move national events, you know, at the micro level all the way through to the national level. This document, if I was in your position, I'm not telling you what to do, I would take this document and sit down and do and break it down and go, what can we incorporate out of this into the party. And because what Newt is saying in this whole document is what anybody who wants to be a successful party needs to do. That's kind of part of why we're going through it.
Yeah, I kind of I agree with that definitely. Because this isn't something that could just be used by the Republican Party yet.
Yeah, I mean, Newt is brilliant. He sees micro, he sees macro, he sees levels. That's the way the guy's mind works.
But at the same time, though, what people have to understand, and I'll be interested to read through that and see how we can bring it on. But see, some of the stuff that people don't understand is that a lot of what works within the two major parties, it has almost absolutely nothing to do with a third party effort. And
you got to read the document.
Cynthia Davis discovered. You know, when she was a Republican state representative, she just had people out of the blue, just never knew them, didn't know anything about them, send her $10,000, $20,000 donations just simply because she had an R beside her name. And that doesn't play here. And those are that's just one example of the many things that barriers that we have to cross.
Yeah. Well, wait, make sure I'm not on. No, I'm still. I thought I had muted myself. No, but he's not talking about fundraising. He's talking about building.
No. I'm not talking solely about fundraising either. I'm just saying that's one example of why some of the stuff that is applicable to, you know, really doing very well and moving the masses through the two-party system is because there is a system in place already, and trying to break down that system, a lot of those things just do not work for us.
All right.
You know what, Randy and everyone, I just want to say one thing here. What I'm frustrated about is I don't see things. I see things a little bit different. I'm looking at examples, and I'm pretty good with the reality of what the situation is today. I can't look back because I'm not educated enough to know how to bring the past into the present. So I am able to look at the present and see where do we go from here. First of all, to me, it looks like we are not a two-party system. We are not a three-party system. We are a Democrat Party system. Also, we should know what we're dealing with the president that we have now, what his policies are, what is his issues, and what is he here to do in our country. That, until we understand that, until we know how to handle that, we're not likely to move forward that much, because good people are not going to want to be in politics and in Congress as time goes on. I see where we're not going to get better, we're going to get worse. And because we know what we see that's happening, we see, and we don't all agree on even what is happening that we are looking at. It is what we don't know, what we're not told, and what's going on behind closed doors that is what should be of concern. Now, conservatives have been thrown out of Congress. We've lost some very, very good conservative senators and people from the House, and there's going to be more to come. They're rhinos, so we have the rhinos and we have the Democrats. We don't have, in my opinion, what I knew as a Republican Party. Now, if I'm wrong, that's fine, but I see things differently because what's happened in the past, Newt was working under a marvelous president and he got along. That's in the past. We don't have that for president. We have a non-American, to make it lightly, in the White House, who agenda is not to continue. continue the country in growth and development and happiness, but to tear us down and to make us a one world, and he is on the way. That is what people are stressful about and are frightened about, and I don't blame them. And I think that's all I can say at this point.
Let me throw something in to help you out historically. You were talking about the historical aspect of it.
Well,
the only reason that Clinton worked with Newt is because Newt was good at stopping him dead in his tracks.
Oh,
and then
yes.
Clinton realized that, oh, my God, I can't get anything past this guy, and I'm going to have to work with him. And that's
Chris,
the problem
that's
with Boehner.
Why they did what they did with Newt this time, because they know what would be if he were president. They don't want him.
But let me throw this out, that Newt did not single-handedly take on Clinton. Newt had, you know, a Congress, at least representatives, behind him. And so, you know, that's the problem we're facing right now, is we got, you know, Obama would be absolutely powerless if we had a Congress that knew what their job was. And the problem is, we as Americans are electing horrible congressmen, which includes both the House of Representatives and the Senate, as well as a horrible president. So, I mean, we're wrapped around just electing horrible people straight across the board who has no clue, has no fidelity to our Constitution.
Well, if other countries had such a president like this, they wouldn't, and they knew that he wasn't eligible, they would not leave him in office for one day, and we're leaving him in for four more years. And do you think that in 2014 it's going to be any safer, any better? Heck no. In fact, it's going to be worse because each day goes by, it's horrified. It's just horrified. And wait till you get in that health care bill. It is just going to be amazing. It is amazing. I don't even know how I'm going to handle some of that myself. That is the stone thrower.
It's going to have to get ugly before people wake up, Harriet.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I always am joking. You're on my group. You know, you see,
yeah.
I make little notes. I go, crash it. Quit playing games. Quit milking it. Quit playing games. You know, it's like Newt and the two people said, it was Rand Paul and Newt said, you know, vote present, walk away, and let them pass their damn bill. They own it. Quit giving in, because Obama plays Boehner and his group like a frickin' fiddle.
And you can't,
he's only one man. And that's the thing. It's just so amazing to me the last 2 years, watching the Republicans groan and piss and moan and complain, and then they pass the debt ceiling increase, they have control of appropriations. They hand him everything, and then they bitch about how he spends money. That is insane. I've heard Newt talking about this, going, you control appropriations. You control the purse string. You control this. You control that. As the House. I mean, he was the Speaker of the House. He's going, we have 100 tools or, you know, 5 key tools to use, and negotiation is the last one you use.
Yeah.
You have to use these powers that were given you, and you see me all the time making these posts. Either these guys are incompetent or they're corrupt and they're part of the same political agenda, and we know they're corrupt. But it's only a handful of those guys in the leadership positions, you know, and Speaker of the House is pretty powerful, and if he's totally corrupt, and he's helping move us in this direction of this Obama agenda, he's got to go. You know, we need some kind of stopgap between now and 2014.
Well,
you know?
There's something to work on. We have something to work on. I don't deny that.
And speaking of that, working on, I do see there's about 11 minutes left of the recording time. I'm telling you, it goes fast. It definitely does. So what I like to do is I've got a number of folks on the line. So I've got Kelly, you, Chris, Harriet, and Randy. So what I'd like to do is I'll start with Kelly, and each got about a minute, a little bit more than a minute to do some closing statements, in which where do you think we should go in the new year moving forward in defeating liberals now to 2014? And we'll go, as I said, Kelly, then Harriet, Chris, and then Randy, and then I'll close out the show.
No, Randy can go before me. I'll close out. I'll do the final.
Yeah, Randy can have my time. I'm ready to listen. Thank you so much.
We'll go ahead, Kelly, and then we'll go with Randy, and then Chris, and then I'll close out.
All right. I want to address one fundamental problem, if you will, with this two-party system. You said liberals. I thought rhinos. Whoops, sorry. Liberals, rhinos. I can't. Do either of them study the Constitution? All right. So we got this thing called the Commission on Presidential Debate. So, yes, that sounds like government authorized. It's a private corporation. They have a bunch of rules that make it sound, oh, okay, that sounds pretty reasonable. Let's see, you got to attain at the age 35. This role, that role, that role. This just to be on in front of the cameras, okay? By the way, this is a great gig for a two-party system because they make up the rules and they say to the major media, we will not come before you unless you agree to our rules. Of course, the media says, well, this is big-time dollars. This is a Super Bowl politics. So we'll go ahead and agree to your rules. Okay, well, these four rules apply if you want to be on a debate. One of them is you have to have obtained 15% approval on three major polls. Okay, let's examine this thing called polls. Now, a lot of work can be done in suspicion. I can't confirm this, but I have the right to a suspicion. Here's my suspicion. Who the hell pays the polls? Well, that's right, the Republicans and Democrats. What's in the contract to receive funding? You do not ask about a third party. You only ask Republican or Democrat. Again, this is suspicion. But in this mantra of who are you most likely to vote for, this Republican or Democrat? Wait. Why don't you ask about a third party? Oh, that's right. That's in the contract to gain the funding for your polls. How many of us have actually donated to a polling company? None of us. So they have this wrapped up because of the polls. Sorry, I'm puffing my paper. I'm beyond frustrated. This is how it's a suspicion. The only ones who are funding the polls are Republicans and Democrats, and their contracts. You cannot ask if a third party is going to be polled. Are you interested in the third party? Nope, sorry, your contract says I can't ask that question. Therefore, we have a duopoly. I wish I could find out their contracts. Because I will bet you these poll companies cannot ask the question, are you interested in the third party? They can't. But again, it's a suspicion. But this is a brilliant way. If I had an evil mind and I had no conscience and I had no best interest for the American people, I would set it up so only Republicans and Democrats. And this is the mess we have. And then the Congress and the Senate follows because people want to vote for a winner. Oh, I'm frustrated. I'm sorry. We got to get somebody on the line. We got to interview somebody who knows much more details about this. But that's my suspicion. I got to shut up now.
Well, we'll definitely, that's definitely something to explore here, and I wouldn't mind having someone with that expertise here on the show. So we'll go over to Randy, and go ahead.
Well, you know, what I'd like to leave you with is, you know, I realize that we are facing a lot of evil times. And, you know, one of the things that I thought I came across, which was absolutely phenomenal, was there was a terrorist who was a guy who was funding terrorism. And there was a $500,000 head reward on him. And he was caught in Pakistan, I believe it was. And the Pakistanis held on to him for a little bit before they actually let the United States know that they had him. And then the United States got to interrogate him there in Pakistan. Well, the United States started trying to get this guy extradited to the United States. Come to find out, he was a Canadian citizen. Now, here's the thing. there's a the Geneva Convention says that if you have this situation where you have a prisoner of war, that you are supposed to immediately notify their country that you have this person as a prisoner. Well, they held this guy for 14 months before anybody knew about it. And so then all of a sudden Canada finds out that they've been holding a Canadian citizen. Well, they extradited him to Canada. Now the United States is going to Canada to try to get this guy extradited to the United States. And so the guy went to the Canadian Appeals Court, and which they issued a decision. And they issued this decision to protect this guy because they've been violating this guy's human rights and the Geneva Convention for over 14 months and torturing him and all of this stuff without anybody knowing it. Well, the judge rendered the decision that the United States was not going to get their hands on this guy because they've already violated his human rights. But in the decision, and this is the important part here that I want to get to, is in the process, they said, look, we are going to hold up this, our Constitution and the civil rights and the law. We are going to uphold the law, even though it seems like for a time terrorism wins. For if we do not uphold the law, then in the long term, terrorism has won and destroyed our ability to uphold even the law. So I'm making this application to this whole idea about, well, we've got to make sure we've got to support the Republican Party for a little bit because we got to get rid of the evil guy. Well, look, stop supporting the evil. Even though it looks like for a time evil is going to win, we must build these parties. For if we do not, in the long term, the two-party duopoly has won.
Thank you, Randy. Thank you very much, and we look forward to hearing more in the future of you coming on us discussing that. And I know there's some things we're working on about the young constitutionalists. I'd like to get them on as well, and a show we're talking about getting together for next week. But Chris, I'm going to give the floor over to you for the next minute and a half to close out, and then I'll close out the show.
Hey, I just, my son, you know, we've been doing this research on citizens who save lives, you know, with weapons, and he just found a site, a YouTube site that posts a bunch of stuff, so some pretty cool stuff. We're going to be profiling these cases on our show. You know, every time we do a show, we'll profile one or two cases of, you know, people exercising their constitutional right and, you know, take out the bad guy. Yeah, I'm interested in hearing Randy's kickback on when he gets time to go through the Gingrich doc, because I think there's a lot of good information in there.
It definitely. We'll be covering more of it because there's still probably about 9 or 10 of the statements slash questions that we need to cover. And as we've seen on all the nights we've been covering this document, this memo, this article, this letter to the RNC, that it definitely opens up a lot of discussion about a lot of different other topics, which are both relevant and important. But, of course, I'd like to thank you, gentlemen, and you, lady, for coming on tonight. Thank you for all
listeners. You're welcome.
Great. Thank you. And
I just want to tell you I love you. I really appreciate you, Harriet. Just want you to know.
Oh, well, thank you. Likewise.
That's awesome.
At least I could express myself truthfully when I'm on these programs.
Well, there you go, and that's a big part of what Barnes Logic talks about.
Yeah, and I can be challenged, and I can challenge back, and if I'm wrong, then that's okay. I'm trying to get educated more. I need it.
Well, and that's another thing we do here in all the shows. And speaking of all the shows, please visit the shows such as Coalition of Freedom here, where you'll hear more from Chris, and then you can hear more of Randy on Constitutionally Correct. And then, of course, there is the Tex and Rex show. You can all visit all of them on the Blog Talk Radio. Just check them out under Conservative Politics section of Blog Talk Radio and for their times of their showing. And also check out the website patriotjournalist.com and, of course, www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com and check out the links and things we have there. And I will end tonight, as I do every night, and hope to see everyone again on the show. But this will be by some music by Julia Newman, who I'm working on trying to come onto the show for an interview next week, where she's composed some music that I'm sure you've heard. So I will end with that. Good night, all, and take care.
Good night.
Night.